space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Listening to Mad Science, insane in a state of mind that prevents normal perception, behavior, or social interaction, seriously mental ill, shocking and outrageous. Oh yeah, okay. So anyway, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. As well as if you want to go over and join the People for People Radio Network there, if you scroll down there on the Super Chat Room, you'll find a banner ad down there. Just click on that and you go over and say hi and tell them old crazy-haired insane Chaziz sent you. And don't forget to check out Wolf Spirit Radio. My brain is like seriously distracted because I'm trying to find a definition for insanity, which there it is. I think I already read that. No, maybe I didn't. Anyway, insanity, the state of being seriously mental ill, madness, extreme foolishness, or irrationality. All right, so Wikipedia, when it starts off, it says crazy, insane, madman, barking mad, and mad woman. Redirect here, it's got a different link or whatever. Insanity, craziness, or madness is a spectrum of both group and individual behaviors characterized by certain abnormal mental or behavioral patterns. Insanity may manifest as violations of societal norms including a person or persons becoming danger to themselves or others, though not all such acts are considered insanity. It has been associated with the idea of contagion. I didn't know insanity could be contagious. Okay. As in a case of copycat suicide. Well, nobody's going to like whack themselves around here anyway. So, what am I talking about? It's driving me insane just talking about what I'm talking about. Just trying to think about what it is that I'm talking about is driving me nuts. Basically, it'd be a lot easier for me if people would stop saying that there's problems in the world, because then I wouldn't have to feel like I need to go out and try to help fix them. There's all kinds of stuff that you pick your poison, it's out there. There's all kinds of dilemmas in every single direction, most of which could be resolved simply by using some common sense and technology that's already in existence. I spent a lot of time doing a lot of research. I'm actually going to be posting up a whole lot of research on the new website and another website that I've actually had parked. So if you want a direct link to that, then right there at the very tip top of the Super Chat Room, and actually a couple different places on the Chaziz Radio website, there is a little banner link that says visit www.chaziz.com, and there you can you'll have links to everything, Facebook, Twitter, and all the other craziness. Basically, I've spread Chaziz Radio out all over the place. It's on all kinds of different social media platforms, because when I post certain bits of information, I want them to go to as many places as possible so that as many people get an opportunity to see it before censorship or whatever craziness comes into play that kind of likes to try to stop you from talking about certain informations and such. You know, it says, Mad Science, a search for free energy on my YouTube channel. And I pretty much believe I'm already there. I already think I've already proven time and time again about energy being free. It's just that there's this thing out there. People have to have a magical device. They have to have something physical that they can see and measure and, basically be proof of what they think is possible, what they probably know is possible. Let me see if I can get my mind in order here. Because I really think maybe I am going insane. As long as I've been doing this, every time somebody says that there's a problem, I try to find a solution for that problem. And I post the ideas and solution out there. I've written letters to senators and congressmen and even presidents and people of all different types of social statuses and different organizations, trying to give them what I believe to be a solution to a problem. And it seems like either I'm completely wrong in everything that I say, or there really isn't no problem. Or there really isn't no... there's nobody who really cares. They care enough about whatever environmental disaster is going on. They care enough to not listen to any solution. This last show that I did called the Red Tide Solution barely got any views on the video that I posted. Well, of course, that was a podcast video. It's not really that great of a video. It's just me talking on the radio. But it explains... I sit there and explained everything that I felt like would actually solve that problem. But you would have thought that more people would have wanted to at least look into it to see what it was about. But there wasn't hardly any views on that. And the governor of Florida when I first became aware, somebody told me there was a problem down in Florida where they had this toxic algae blooms killing off fish and all that. And so I immediately jumped out there with some information and tried to contact the right people and give them the information necessary. But you know, I didn't even get so much as a form letter back from that governor. No kind of response as if they even received that letter. And so I posted this link on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and Shaziz Radio and everywhere that I could possibly put it out there so that somebody of influence could possibly pass that information on to somebody important. But it never it never got any traction. You know, if you go out there and do something really stupid, really ignorant and crazy, you'll get a video to go viral. You'll get a message out there to millions of people, some of which probably wouldn't even recognize that you was actually giving them a message. They'd just be laughing at whatever stupid thing you did, you know. But when it comes down to trying to get a serious message, a solution to any given problem, you name it, it doesn't matter. There's so many problems in this world, according to what you've been told, that, pick your poison. Like I said, you could pick in any doggone different direction, come up with the perfect solution, try to send it out to everybody and his brother. Maybe a few people will pick up on it and they'll actually, pass it to a couple of their friends, but it loses ground really fast. And out here in the social media network, I told this story one time about how I posted a story about my dog. And just wanted to share that story about my dog whenever I put it out there. But it was like when I put that story on the internet, I could quite physically and literally watch as my story started scrolling down, as new stories started coming in, new memes and jokes and people just saying random stuff and craziness. And I could watch my story get lower and lower and lower. It's just like getting washed downstream. It's going down the river of data out to sea. You know, so somewhere there's a story about my dog out there in the vastness of cyberspace. And it may never ever be seen again. Unless I go out there and I retrieve that story and throw it back in the pond and hope that somebody grabs it as it floats by. Sometimes this platform that we call the World Wide Web is quite worthless. And it seems to me that when you watch how people react and treat one another on there, I think the definition of insanity is thinking that you could use the internet to pass information along. Because unless you grab the mind of the people and you can actually keep them focused long enough to actually contemplate on information or a story, it's just like a constant flood of data. And some of these bits of information will sit out there and they'll be there for those that are looking for them. But if they ain't looking for the story, it's hard to send one viral. It's hard to get enough people to the table to try to resolve anything. So it's enough to drive you quite literally insane. You watch the watch all the news and everything, that even the alternative media, how they're talking about, you know, all these different events and new elections coming up here, and we're doomed if we don't vote for this guy, and we're doomed if we don't vote for that guy, or whatever. And then you got crazy people going out there rioting and protesting and beating each other up. And I have to wonder about that too. Sometimes I think, you know, these people that are out there rioting and protesting, what if they actually get what it is that they wanted? Would they be satisfied? Or would there be some other reason to riot and protest? It's almost as if some individuals in this world really enjoy the drama and the craziness of it all. Being able to just run out there and smash windows and tear things up. Just, aha, it's fun. That kind of thing. You know, I don't agree with the fact that there's an energy crisis, or has ever been an energy crisis. And I'm probably the king of climate deniers. Climate change deniers. Global warming deniers. I'm probably the king. I'm probably the oldest member of the climate change debunkers, deniers, or whatever. Because I've been hollering about that since I was 9 years old, because the science is just doesn't add up. It's bogus. And there's all kinds of subjects out there like that. People said that there was a excuse me. People said that there was a need for clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. And for like at least the last 20 years or more, I've been watching as people come to the table with ideas such as Stan Myers. You know, he's going to make a car that'll run on water. And I watched even back in that day, all the way to present day, as people did everything they could to discourage that man from doing the job, and to basically try to put him off as being crazy. And it wasn't just Stan Myers. It was just about every single alternative researcher under the sun. And then you also had those individuals that, you know, come into the alternative energy community and began to, you know, fraudulently make fake devices and try to sell, you know, free energy device plans to people. So it wasn't just a hindrance from people trying to put a stop to anybody talking about free energy or claiming that they had free energy. There was also scam artists as well that we had to contend with. I've got a disc with a PDF energy device disc that I got that I'm going to try to upload here pretty soon that a man gave me. I'll share with people. It's pretty interesting. I'll throw it on the website for people to find it. But there are a lot of brilliant individuals throughout the history of time that tried to give to the world technologies that would basically free them from the bondage of the so-called fossil fuel industries. That would give people, you know, an incentive not to be fighting over resources. In the world out there, somebody has an abundance of oil, they want to fight over who can sell it, how it can be sold, what type of money that can be used to buy it. There's a term called petrodollar. And people go fighting over where a gas pipeline can go and where it can't go, where an oil pipeline can go and where it can't go. You're talking a billions, if not trillion dollars industries that there's a way to make money just fighting over the deal. And so, as I'm sitting here trying to shout out to the average Joe, because it's the average Joe that matters, it's not the governments, it's not the corporations or the power companies, industries, mainstream industries, or whatever. It's the average Joe that has the power to decide which direction that they want to go as a society. But the average Joe, so stuck in the matrix, won't pass information on. They won't pass this information around because, for the most part, they've been told it's not even possible. Terms like zero point and over unity and perpetual motion were threw in there to muddy up the water so that people wouldn't understand that energy is free. It really seriously is. There's no debate about it. The only ones who can debate free energy is those who are so stuck in the laws of physics and the laws of this and that, and they're not willing to step outside the box to understand that even the body that they're walking around in that is being ran by energy from they don't even know where to all the chemistry that is the body, the human body and the mind. That is every bit, if you break it all down, and every bit of its energy. All the different types of frequency ranges that are going out there from basically the wave and the ocean of energy, the sea of energy that surrounds everybody. You're surrounded by hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen and all these different scientific labels for elements and such. And we know what each one of these elements are capable of doing. It's amazing to me that, people don't understand how powerful everything that is around them actually is. I mean, has anybody ever measured the amount of energy released in a forest fire? Has anybody ever measured something as simple as the amount of energy that is released in just a simple match? Has anybody ever, measured how much wasted energy from one light bulb? I really honestly don't think that people seriously contemplate the reality of how much energy that they are surrounded by. And even something as simple as a 9-volt battery that I tried to share with in a couple of my videos on my YouTube channel, which makes no sense to me, this YouTube channel. YouTube, the internet, it doesn't make any sense because it says I've got 8,500 some odd subscribers, but the video views don't even reflect even a fraction of that. And I've shared videos on all different social media networks and platforms and this radio show and information, and people are claiming that they want to resolve issues in the world, and when those folks that come together to say, yeah, hey, we got the solutions, they're not damned if I didn't get shut down again. Oh my. Yep. Apparently I'm going out on people for people at the second. You just can't talk about certain subjects. It's ridiculousness. Says my stream is connecting to the server. And people wonder why this drives me insane. Alright folks, looks like I'm having technical difficulties. Sorry about this. This is going to be a terrible podcast. All right. I just don't get it. I do not understand what in tarnation is going on. That just ain't the first time, and more than likely it won't be the last. I'm just going to keep doing the podcast, and maybe I'll get this thing uploaded. But I even lost my doggone train of thought. It just doesn't make any doggone sense. This world, it's so frustrating. So incredibly aggravating. I gotta see something here. And blast it. Alright, let's try this again. Yep, getting blowed out of the water again. There we go. Now maybe that'll stay there for just a second. Huh. Alright, so yeah, I'm like really seriously getting frustrated with the whole entire situation. It just doesn't make any doggone sense to me, because It's as if there's a deliberate attempt to keep anybody from doing anything right in this world. It seems like there's a deliberate attempt to discourage you. You know, I looked up the different terms for insanity and going crazy and stuff. There are solutions available out there. But the indoctrination of the average Joe, it's mind-blowing. It's seriously mind-blowing. You know, I thought when that doggone flat earth thing came along, sure a lot of you by now has probably heard about it. I thought that was a cool thing, because now you had people out there trying to debate about whether or not the earth was flat or round or whatever. And a lot of people got mad at me because I entertained it. It wasn't because I thought the earth was flat or round or anything like that. It was merely the fact that there were people out there that were actually using their mind is something that I hadn't seen before for a long time, because they, you know, people just went through life and they believed whatever was told to them, that was it. But now, hold on a second, now everybody was, you know, coming to a screeching halt and saying, wait a second, I'm questioning this and I'm questioning that. And it looked like for a second there that that might actually be a plus. And it was interesting to actually listen to both sides of the story to see how that debate actually played out. It was interesting. And, you know, people would find solutions for doing measurements and, you know, what we can do to prove or disprove, or, you know, basically the scientific method looked like it was coming alive again. It looked like that people were actually going to begin to use real science again. Conspiracy theories, boy, I tell you, there's years and years worth of conspiracy theories out there. It's about everything under the sun. And some of which actually went viral. Some of which, you pull that video up and there's millions of views on it. I don't even know whether or not there really is a problem in this world. I'm actually starting to question my sanity, because I'm starting to feel like I'm in the Truman Show. This has to be some sort of joke and there's cameras on the other side. Basic science in just about every different direction has the answer to solve so-called energy crises and so-called natural disasters and such. There's, you know, like the red tide thing, you know, there are plants out there that filter toxins from water, and they'll filter, you know, all kinds of, they'll basically clean the water up. Nature's filtration system. And there are methods by which you can mimic nature and you can clean water. Some people had made millions of dollars making filtration systems that would filter in the microns, you know, way down to smallest particles, and, you know, kill off any, you know, viruses or whatever that would be in there. And so the technology and the information's available. It just drives me insane, because I'm still hearing that the world is in bad shape. And I don't even know if it is or not. There's people out there that are intellectually dishonest with themselves and everyone around them. The Big Bang Theory, according to science, creationism, neither one of which could actually be proven by anybody. Neither one of them. Because according to one, it was 6 or 7,000 years ago. According to the other, it was several billions of years ago. And there's nobody alive today that, yeah, Stephen said, have they blamed the Russians for the red tide yet? Jesus. That's probably next. That's probably exactly where it's going to go. Doggone Russians are trying to kill off all of our fish. Anyway, back to the whole Big Bang Theory and the creation theory. There's nobody who was alive back then who could be a witness, a first-hand witness, and had documented evidence of the actual occurrence and how everything played out. So it's just a matter of, you know, what do you believe, what sounds the most plausible to you and such. But sitting there trying to figure out what in the heck is going on in the minds of the masses out there, it'll drive you insane. I want to see forward moving progress And so I put all these ideas on the table, and I'm hoping that people will take these ideas and run with them. You know, heck, take an idea that you heard here on Mad Science and, you know, go out there and build something and then patent it for yourself and make your fortune or whatever. Just make the world a better place in the process of doing that. I have no idea why whenever I hit certain subjects that I end up having internet problems right out of the doggone gate. It drives me nuts. This happens so much. So you have to think, you know, are the handlers behind the scenes of the Truman Show trying to suppress what you say and all the information that you think you're getting out there to the world? It's not really going anywhere. You're just walking into a box and they're recording you for a science experiment or some kind of craziness. Heck, we could develop our own conspiracy theory right here. But we want to get anything accomplished in the world. You know, I got a mechanical mind. But I'm not a chef. I'm not an artist or a painter or a craftsman. My mind sees things mechanically, and so I try to explain them to those individuals who are craftsmen or, you know, artists or whatever, in hopes that I could inspire them to build it. But in the process of trying to give them inspiration to take the idea that's in my head and actually put it into a physical product or device is being hindered by the guy on the other side who sounds smart but is telling the person that has the skill set to do what it is that I don't have the skill set to do, oh no, that never worked. That's against the second law of thermodynamics. That's against the laws of physics. That won't work. And so the person that actually has the talent to build what it is that I'm saying is possible because I can see it mechanically in my mind is being convinced that it's not possible by the man over there who believes that he knows it all because of what the book said. That's a big hindrance, because the man who could have made it reality by fabricating the device to test to see whether it did what I said it would do or whether it didn't do what I said it would do, to prove or disprove the theory to be either fact or fiction, was hindered by the individual who didn't have the mechanical mind, who only had what the school book said. And then according to their way of thinking, the school book says it's not possible, then it's not possible. This is what I've witnessed in all these years of trying to do radio shows and share ideas with people. And if I didn't have the proper terminology to match what the school book said, that would get me in trouble as well. If I didn't agree with the measurements or the science of what was told in that book, then I was a heretic. I lost a lot of friends just over the terms current, watts, and amps. Because one particular individual wanted to have it their way and basically went from everywhere to trying to basically tell me how wrong I was to personal attacks, behind my back and talking about how terrible of a person I was. And it even escalated to the point where another individual who didn't even know me said that I needed to be executed. So the physical and the mental abuse that people go through just trying to give the world hope and ideas, it's off the scale. And so you have to question your sanity if you're willing to come back and back again, over and over again, come back and try and keep on trying and keep on pushing out the information, hoping that someday something would click and everybody would come together and start to resolve the so-called problems of the world. Giving the world free energy? It's impossible. It's flat out impossible. In today's society, it's the only thing that's not possible. Because even if you put a device on the table, it stands true that everything that's ever been put out there on the table before has been shelved and suppressed, pushed aside, supposedly debunked, picked apart. People weren't able to replicate it. And it basically just went by the wayside. There's tons and tons and tons of research out there. Steven's proven that. Go look at his link, the resource page. He's got links to researchers and all kinds of different research of just amazing amounts. There's so many different links on that page. It's mind-blowing. And it doesn't even scratch the surface of what's available to us. And every single one of these devices, it don't matter which one you're talking about, has some little nuggets that if you took these little bits and pieces from these different devices and put these things together in the perfect order, the puzzle pieces, so to speak, it actually had working devices. Now I can build some things out of junk, and I can show proof of concept of just about everything that I've said. But for somebody to, make it precision, that somebody ain't me, because I don't have the milling equipment and I don't have, lathes and all the things to make precision bearings and everything like that, the manufacturing. I got the idea. I got the mechanical mind. I understand what needs to be done. I can explain to somebody what needs to be done, but the mathematics needs to be, who's the one that's good at mathematics? Who can measure it out? Who can make it so precise? Within tiny tolerances. Look at the corporations out there that are actually making things. Companies, auto industries, they hire the best of the best to come in there and run their machines, pay them a wage, and as long as nobody questions their intentions and just does their job, then everybody's happy. People think that it's impossible for us to do a lot of things because the government's too powerful and the companies are too rich and there's no way that anybody can do anything. It's kind of ridiculous to even listen to all that because there's all kinds of different GoFundMe accounts out there. If you're curious, someday just go out there and start looking around at people that's trying to raise money for different projects. And regardless of whether their project's a sham or not, sham or whatever, you'll see that when people come together and pull resources with that particular individual, they may or may not be able to get something done. They may reach their goal and they may not, but there are people out there willing to come together and pull their resources in order to see if something's possible or to get a particular project up and going. So it's not like if all the people of the world decided they wanted to do something that they couldn't get done. You got a million people that decide they want an engine that runs on pure distilled water, and they come together with a dollar a piece, and they pull the brilliant minds, the people that can run milling machines and lathes and all that kind of stuff, and people can run calculations. You get a team together like that, you got $1 million in your pocket, and you can actually build a working prototype with less than 30 days. You got a proof of concept, and you can share with the world. I don't get it. Would everybody in the world give me $1 million if I promised them a device? I don't think so. I think what they would do is saying, look, OSHA's is trying to scam people. That's why I ensured that I wasn't going to ask anybody for anything. If I couldn't do it myself, if I couldn't do it with recycled materials, then I wasn't going to do it at all. I would show the world the proof of concept, and I would show people, you know, the science, and point them in the right direction, and allow them to build them. Give them the idea and let them run with that idea as far as they can take it. Because the moment I'm a Stan Myers and I got a dune buggy and I'm running around on a dune buggy with running on pure distilled water. Well, his wasn't pure distilled water. He was using a different method, but nonetheless, still running on hydrogen technology. The moment I got that, I get the same treatment he did. Stephen said, even if you put a working device on the table, once you try and explain how it works, it is insanity at the odds with what they have been taught on how electricity works or how the device could possibly perform, as you say, and show them it actually working. It's true. Most of the people wouldn't understand what you were trying to show them. And those who did have an idea what the book said, they wouldn't believe it's possible. So even when you try to give it to them, I've talked to some of the best mechanics in the world. And these folks, they know internal combustion engines. They know where the weaknesses and the flaws are in there. They know where certain things could actually be changed. But sometimes, you know, they go by the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, okay, this thing's only 20 or 30% efficient, but it still runs and it still has fun. I don't care. I can waste all the gasoline and oil that I want. Which, in fact, they're right, because they can waste all the gasoline and oil they want as long as they're willing to pay for it for the corporation. And they don't ever have to worry about the oil ever running out, so there'll always be fuel available for that machine, so they can waste as much as it wants. It's like water, you know. Think about how many gallons of water that person uses to take a shower. You got all this water that rushes off, it goes down, so now it's dirty water, you know. It goes down and has to be filtered and retreated before it's drinkable again. But thousands and thousands, if not trillions, of gallons of water in every single nation going in all different directions, down toilets and through dishwashers and, you know, car washes and all this kind of stuff, and thousands and thousands, if not trillions, of gallons of water in every single direction, running out on the street, being poured out on the lawn through fertilizers and washing grease off the sidewalk and all that kind of stuff there. And you would think, oh, wow, we're going to run out of water. It's not possible. It's not physically possible to ever run out of water on this planet or flat plane or whatever it is you believe we're on. It's not possible. It's not possible to ever run out of crude oil. There's nothing on this planet that we could ever run out of. Because this Earth is a self-contained biosphere that continuously recycles everything. And maybe this particular plot of land is all dried out and deserted because it has been depleted of all its resources. But if left alone, and nature does what nature does, it'll clean it back up. You stop mowing your lawn for a couple weeks and the grass is up to your neck. You don't mow it for another several months and you got trees growing. Before too long, year or so down the line, it looks like you never even was there. Nature takes back whatever man does not use. And that's just common sense. That's scientific observation by actually paying attention to what you're seeing. What you're witnessing. So the trick is, how in the heck are you going to get any information out there to people out there that are powerful enough, wealthy enough, to basically change the world that we live in by making things right? Building what they said they needed. They said we needed to be energy independent. We needed to be energy efficient. And it's all a lie. Every doggone bit of it's a lie. They never wanted energy independence. They never wanted energy efficiency. It's all a lie. They got smart meters on there now. They call them smart meters, and all they do is scam people out of more money. When my mother had a regular analog style electric meter on her building, she had a reasonable bill. She didn't use very much electricity. But the moment they put the smart meter on there, her bill doubled, possibly even tripled. For the same amount of energy used, the smart one was able to calculate it into costing her more money than she was paying before. That she couldn't afford. People claim to want free energy. Just like everybody wants a cake. They want some cookies. But they don't want to help make it. They don't want to come together and put their egos aside and bring their talents to the table to build it. And some people just don't have the capability to do anything. What's it going to take? I've offered to sign away every bit of intellectual rights of things to any corporation willing to humor me and build a prototype of so many different devices. I said, I will explain to you exactly what needs to be made, and I will sign away any intellectual rights so that you don't even have to pay me for my services. The only thing that I want out of this entire deal is one working prototype. That's it. The rest is all yours. The millions that you make afterwards, all yours. That's it. Nothing. Not one taker. Companies that, had tools that I didn't have, like, plasma cutters with the digital, where you could basically put a drawing down, scan it into the computer, and that computer would put it to whatever size you wanted and cut up parts out of metal to build a prototype. Offered them deals like that too. Hey, I'll give you all these designs, you can have them patented and you can make the money off of it. All I need is these parts to put this together to prove what it is that I'm saying. Nothing. They wanted, if they were to make any parts for me, they wanted thousands of dollars worth of orders. They wanted me to be able to sign the paper and say that I would buy this many from them. They didn't care what it was for. They just wanted to ensure that I was going to buy a lot of them. It was the bottom line in the dollar that slowed down the progress of everything in the alternative energy research. People's greed and egos, trolls, misinformants, or whatever you call them. There are enough of those people around that would go into, you know, people's YouTube videos and tell people how stupid they are. Oh, you're stupid. You don't understand this or whatever. You explained it wrong. You got the wrong terminology. So, the question was, am I going insane? It's highly possible. I put a, they're going, let me see, I gotta have to look that back up. Insane. In a state of mind that prevents normal perception, behavior, or social interaction, seriously mentally ill, shocking, or outrageous. Huh. You know, throughout history, there were people that told people like the Wright brothers that they would never fly. If a man was meant to fly, God would have gave him wings. Luckily, the Wright brothers didn't listen, and they built their airplane anyway, and they actually flew. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have the technologies we got right now. So they did it. Guys like Stan Myers, they told enough people out there that hydrogen technology was possible. And so today you hear about hydrogen technology being possible. And in all actuality, there are vehicles to this very day that are running off of hydrogen technology. If you Google up hydrogen vehicles of today. And you'll find there's one that says 2018 Honda Clarity fuel cell hits select California dealers today. Are hydrogen cars the next big thing? It's out there. You know, list of fuel cell cars on Wikipedia. And I actually even despise even using Wikipedia because I know their internal politics and what they say and whatever. It's, they're like really seriously biased. But nonetheless, they got a large list of the hydrogen cell vehicles. Honda FCX Clarity, Mercedes-Benz F-Cell, Hyundai Tucson, whatever, FCEV, Toyota Mirai, River Simple, whatever. Where'd they get these ridiculous names? But anyway, there's a lot of hybrid vehicles out there using hydrogen technology. So, at the time when we were telling everybody you could run a doggone car off of water, the Mythbusters were out there trying to make it look like you were an idiot for even saying it. So, was that planned opposition or... you know, ways to try to, you know, then you had the guys out there that were saying that, oh, well, it's too expensive, that's why they don't do it, or it's not safe, that's why we don't do it. You don't want a Hindenburg in your front yard, do you? Hindenburg, for those, I have to find the link and post that in there. The blimp that was full of hydrogen. let's see if I can spell this. If I can even find it on Google. I misspelled it. There we go. But they use hydrogen because hydrogen was a lighter gas. And the Hindenburg disaster occurred on May 6, 1937 in Manchester Township, New Jersey, United States. The German passenger airship LZ-129 Hindenburg caught fire and was destroyed during an attempt to... Gives you to a lake... A Wikipedia. I can't even say it right. Let's see, where were we at? The attempt to... where is it at? It's frustrating. And this is terrible for live radio, too. The disaster was the subject of a spectacular newsreel coverage, photographs, and Herbert Morrison recorded radio eyewitness reports from the landing field, which were broadcast the next day. A variety of hypotheses have been put forward for both cause and ignition and fuel. For ensuing fire, the event shattered the public confidence in giant passenger carrying rigid airships. Anyway, modern day blimps, I believe, use helium. Let me see here. Oh, this is crazy. Anyway, I'll go ahead and post this Wikipedia article if you're interested in the Hindenburg disaster. That way you can take a peek at it if you like. But either way, they were using hydrogen technology because hydrogen's a lighter gas and like helium would make things float, and it just didn't go so well in that particular incident. So I'll post that. Alright, so yep. Just love it when my brain stops. Anyway, people like the Mythbusters said that hydrogen technology wasn't safe, and they showed this little explosion. Well, actually, it was an implosion, but nonetheless, they ran pure hydrogen into a carburetor without any kind of flashback arrestor, and they got an explosion, which was a completely and utterly dishonest, intellectually dishonest, and flat out dishonest altogether, because they told all their fans that this is why we don't use hydrogen, because it's dangerous. And so your average Joe looking and seeing that big explosion of the carburetor right there would say, oh, okay, I can see that's why we don't use that, you know, and they don't get it. It's ridiculousness that they even did that, and they actually lost one of their probably greatest fans. I thought the Mythbusters were awesome, but after seeing what they did towards the alternative free energy communities, no, they lost all credibility with me. So I wouldn't watch a Mythbusters show if you paid me. They lost me permanently. But anyway, it's just it's mind blowing to me that there's people that says things like, you know, we got this natural disaster that's going on, like the red tide in Florida, and how the green algae from Lake Okeechobee is going down, getting released down into the waterways and going down into, you know, the ocean and killing off all these doggone fish. And so you know, suddenly it's science mind to the rescue. What's the cause? What's the effect? What's the cure? And so when you come across and you see, or from start to finish, what's actually going wrong there, from the over-fertilization of farm fields, cattle runoff and all that kind of stuff, that you're making the water so highly nutrient rich that it is in turn throwing the chemistry of the waterways off of balance and promoting natural algae growth to an extreme algae growth that in turn has a domino effect on the environment all the way down. And so you bring all your science and research to bear, and all the ideas on how to resolve this and how to prevent it for future deals. You know, part of red tide is natural. Part of the green algae is natural. But the way that all these nutrients are being released in certain areas where you already has a little bit of natural algae growth, it just causes it to, you know, get completely out of hand. But the resolution to at least get it back under nature's control is to assist nature by doing what nature does to clean it up to begin with. The duckweed and the watermill, that wasn't the only one out there telling people about duckweed. Turns out in the process of doing research to see why it is that people aren't even responding to emails and information sent to them that would be a solution to the problem, found that other people were reaching out trying to do the same doggone thing, trying to get people to see that there was a solution to it. I wonder if I talk to some of those individuals, whether or not that they would say that they feel like they're going insane as well. Somebody find a solution on how to get information to the public in a way that they would actually pay attention to. I mean, if you wanted to get the message out for flat earth, you could go to your local football game and you could strip down and paint flat earth, research flat earth on your back and your front, and then run around the field until the police catch you and beat you down and drag you out of there in handcuffs. That would probably go viral. But then it would be another justification why people who believe that there's a possibility that the earth isn't what we've been told are crazy. And before you go freaking out on me, I'm not sitting here telling anybody the earth is flat. I don't know. I don't care what shape it is, whether it's flat, round, square, dodecahedron, or what. That's not the point. The point is every time you're trying to do something good, get somebody pointed towards the truth, that's when you get attacked. And when you do it, when you try to deliver the message in the wrong way, that's when the people out there, you know, try to paint you as a loon, which, man, it's so easy to paint somebody as crazy these days. All you got to do is say certain key words to people. Oh, he's one of them conspiracy theorists. He's one of them pseudo-scientists. Huh. It's pure ridiculousness. So, I'm just wondering. I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that energy's free. And I know what needs to be done to actually make a device that would prove said statement that energy's free. But the question is it even possible to convince someone such as a Dream Team that it's possible enough for them to want to share resources with one another to prove it? Now, I'm not a con artist. I'm not the guy the cashy guy out there that goes out there and gets people to hand him a whole lot of money and the promise to get a magical device that you can plug into your house that'll turn all your wiring in your house black and nanocarbon and all, and then eventually you don't even have to have it plugged in anymore. It runs free electricity forever. Never once been scientifically proven. Mark Brash from Zero Fossil Fuels replicated it to his best of his ability, following step by step the procedures told to him, and got the same results that he expected to get, because it doesn't even fall in the realm of real science. Now, in the process of doing that, maybe he tapped into other types of energy, because there's all kinds of types of energy out there. You grab radio waves out of there. You know, if you have the material that is sensitive enough to radio waves and a way to, receive that information, you can turn it back into usable energy again. Tesla proved that over and over again. But to get down to the basic brass tacks of, current amps, watts, energy, the way that your doggone radio and your TV and your electric motors are designed to receive, then you have to have a device that makes an abundant amount of energy that is capable. That scared the crud out of me, man. I wasn't expecting that.
Hello?
Yeah, your phone call just about gave me a stroke. I was right in the middle of a deep thought and trying to tell somebody something, and then doom, 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 and I was like, oh my God. It's like somebody, slamming the door when it's real quiet in the room or whatever.
Are you live on the radio, sis?
Oh yeah, we're live.
Nice.
So, the people that, Steven said Mark getting love is his generator, which is his. That's true, man. And that's a whole doggone thing. If you want to build a device, it has to be able to compete with the energy hogs that we call our transformers and our motors and all that kind of stuff. And, when you got guys like Keshi out there doing the things that he did and telling everybody you gotta love your reactor in order to get free electricity, just ridiculousness, it makes all the rest of the people out there who are actually trying to do something real look bad. There's been a lot of researchers out there that came across this stuff. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm saying there are all types of energies out there. And there are energies that we don't even understand right now. And there are methods by which you can take any form of energy, because it's all the same energy, and you can transfer from this to that to make it back to a usable current, and you have to be able to do it at an extent to where your energy hog appliances will actually, be able to run off of it. But turning your entire house into a black nano-coated wire system that now is supposedly pulling energy out of that's not only a doggone fire hazard, it's just blatantly false. Anyway, you corrupt.
I've nano-coated some of that black wire using the caustic process, and it really does has some strange phenomenons to that wire.
Well, I don't doubt that at all. That's not what I'm saying. But to run the standard household the way that we do with these energy efficient deals, you need something that has a lot of power in order to be able to do what it is that we're doing here. You're not going to get that by turning all the electrical wire in your house black. Where you could get that from is understanding hydrogen technology to the extent that you build an engine that will run off of this type of technology that will then in turn turn the standard generator. Until we get down to the point where we start engineering our appliances to run off of different types of energy, then they're not going to accept that kind of energy. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Are you still there, Ted? I think I lost Ted. Anyway.
I mute my microphone so I don't cause too much background noise.
Oh. Sorry. Well, there's all kinds of science out there. Plasma technology, and I'm talking the type of plasma technology that where you're taking any of the noble gases and energizing them and getting all this electron activity going on in there that's, you know, bringing gas into the fourth state of matter, which is generating heat and light and basically changing that energy from one form to the next. It's all proven technology. And so we got everything necessary to, you know, begin at least the steps towards re-engineering different devices to run off of any type of fuel. Let's see, what did Steven say down there?
Well, I was doing a little research there. I kind of wanted to talk to you last week about some of it. Was like, were these folks in different countries? They're taking different motors, whether they're washing machine motors or DC brushless motors or whatever they are, and they are running generators off of them and seeing that there's enough energy coming off the generator to run the motor and get a load also. Look, I've seen videos of that online for a long time, but I guess I just now sort of believe it's possible.
Well, it is possible to... Look... These ones where they're like a motor generator, where you run, where some people are trying to run an electric motor off of another electric. You got an electric motor, and then you got a generator head. Basically,
yeah.
You know, you start one, and it produces enough electricity to run the other one. Well, yeah. The standard model, it won't work like that, but. It doesn't mean that you can't take that energy, which is a heck of a lot more energy than you've actually produced that took it to run the deal. It's just in a different frequency range than it was initially. They say you can't get out more than you put in. Alright? You're just transferring the same amount of energy and you're guiding it to where you want it to go. And so far, you know, people are overconsumed with trying to produce a self-looping system, which it's not necessary to make it self-looping, is because there's so many different ways to extract energy from the environment and add to that system to make it to where it will run continuously without, you know, being a little continuous self-loop perpetual motion style deal. Does that make sense to you, what I'm trying to say here?
Oh, definitely.
It's not.
I think a lot of it is that when you look at these motor generators, like you're talking a motor spin and generator head, most of them that I view that I feel are the real deal, they use a capacitor. They add an additional capacitor onto the generator head to excite it even more. And I think that that's a pretty big important part of it, is that number one, most of these motors that are running, they're using capacitors to run the motors, and then they're also adding an extra excitation capacitor onto the generator head. And between those two capacitors, the load, it's negligible, believe it or not, but I mean, after what I've studied in energizing things with capacitors and seeing how things work, it would make sense like that.
Yeah.
They're able to get that extra wattage out by putting in, you know, 120 volt, 200 or 20 microfarad capacitor in there, and it's like got the whole darn energizer or the generator head twice as excited as it was before,
yeah.
Making way more electricity.
Even if you only achieved a really super efficiency, that would be well enough for everyone out there that's paying crazy electrical bills. Steven put down in there, he said, aluminum also gets a nanocoat carbon built up on wires. Once it gets thick enough, it catches the fire. That's why they stopped using them. The modern-day electrical systems, they were actually for a while using aluminum wire, in you know, the house, in the power box outside, going into a house, because obviously aluminum's cheaper, it's conductive. But the problem was there was an expansion and contraction kind of deal that went on, and what Stephen just said there, that it would actually cause electrical fires. And so they actually had to put this specific type of conductive grease around it to ensure that it's always connected, it's not being able to flop around and shorten there. That's why I said that with the trying to turn your wires in your house black is not a good idea. But it is making your wires more conductive, you know, I can understand nanocarbon for that. That's understandable. But the way that people are going about a lot of these different deals, I don't discount any alternative energy research out there, because every single one of even the fraudulent ones, every single one of them have processes in there that are based on science. Whether it's ever going to be a device that ever works, that's one thing. But if you took the best pieces from every single device ever created out there, you got little tools in your toolbox now. Like when I explained about how you could take air compressor technology, diesel engine technology, compression ignition, induction heating technology, and steam engine, all this kind of stuff right here, and you could take and use all the physics from every single one of them to quite literally take pure distilled water, heat it up, manipulate it, bring it into steam, break it down into smaller molecules, and break it down yet even farther. And by the time it hits that hot cylinder, it has a massive expansion pushing down the piston, and then on the upstroke cracks the hydrogen and oxygen molecule. And there you go. You've got an engine designed to run on pure distilled water. It's specifically designed to do that. And you can build an engine to run off of anything out there. Just about everything in this world is fuel. So you can specifically engineer an engine to run off of whatever it is that you want. It is, once you understand the physics of it, of any given molecule and what its actions and reactions are to whatever you do to it, then you can turn that working energy force into something usable. So everything from radio waves to static electricity to, you know, water as fuel or whatever, it doesn't matter. There is so much energy available, it's mind-blowing. So, I guess that the thing that's driving me the most, the craziest the most, is that we're here in year 2018, and we still can't get our act together. And all the alternative energy researchers on the planet can't put their egos aside long enough to resolve something that could be actually resolved in less than 30 days. We could actually have a working prototype of any given device. It don't matter which one you want to pick. If you're not in it to get rich and you're just in it to prove that it's possible and to put basically put the alternative energy community back on the map instead of in the dunce cap section of society. People don't believe that Stan Myers was driving around in a vehicle in the 70s on water. People don't believe what Tesla was able to accomplish back in the early or late 1800s or early 1900s. People don't believe what John Bedini was able to do because they ain't been able to reproduce it because they didn't understand what it was he was trying to say. There are modern day researchers out there, not excluding myself, who showed people all kinds of things. They don't believe any of it. The book says it's not possible, and so it must not be possible because this intelligent looking man in a white coat said that it's not possible. And that's frustrating. The, you know, fish dying off over there in Florida, and you know that they're, you know what's causing it, you know how to remedy it, and you try to contact everybody and his brother to give them information how they can actually go about beginning the process of working alongside nature and fixing it. They're not listening. It's like they care enough about the tragedy that they're hollering about to ensure that they do not listen to the solution. That's how much they care. If all these fish are dying off, the manatees and the dolphins and all the different crabs and wildlife in that general vicinity and environment, and you bring forth a solution, if you're not wearing that lab coat, if you don't have a sign that says, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, you ain't getting no answers. So I have to ask myself, is this really even a problem? Is this really even happening?
I'd have to say that it's not. You know, I mean, it's a problem that is, it's just not a problem. I mean, everybody scream and holler about the environment, everybody scream and holler about everything, and then, like you're saying, the solutions are there. I mean, it's not a problem. It's just to me, it's just a lack of real, like, perseverance.
Well, as far as perseverance go, I've been persevering for years. I've been pushing forward even when I get so discouraged that I'm ready to just delete all my channels and get the heck out of Dodge and say the heck with it. You realize how much it takes for me to decide I want to get up and do this again every day? I know the answers are out there, and I figure that's why, you know, the definition of insanity is repeating something over and over again and expecting a different result each time. Well, I do that. I repeat over and over and over again, trying to reach out, thinking that, okay, well, today's going to be my lucky day. Today's the day that the dream team begins to form, and we all get together, and we build things and make things happen, and we put it out there to the world, and we solve these problems that the world's got. But it's not happening. It just isn't happening. And I try to explain to people, I'm not a chef. So I don't cook. All right? My cooking's terrible. You know, I got a mechanical mind. But I'm not a miller machinist. I'm not an electrician or electronics engineer. I mean, while I know a lot about this subject in all the different parts from all the research that I've done and what they're capable of doing, when it comes down to craftsmanship, I can make something out of junk to show you a proof of concept, but I haven't got the skill set or the tools in order to be able to make the precision necessary for this thing to function properly. And so what I do is I reach out there with my mind and I try to find that machinist, that mechanic, that one that can sit there and build an engine. I've watched him. I've watched his craftsmanship. He's good on a lathe. He's good mathematically. And he can mill the stuff out. And when it's done, it looks beautiful. And it's precision. And I tried to reach out with his mechanical mind. And I say, look, if you build this way, and you do this right here, and I explain all the physics and the science to him, and he built that deal, it would be a done deal. But
okay, well, I like that. I can add on to that. It's like, well, let's give a for instance. And most everybody's got a pole transformer feeding their house or a building near them. And it's like, the pole transformer, if somebody was to get one of them and plug it in and to have it all running, the alignment, whatever, you know, and do that kind of work, if you cut the leads going in, if you break the leads going in to that transformer, you cut the L1, the L2 still has voltage. Both leads, you'll read the 110, most likely 110 coming off each one of those legs, even after you cut the leads. So no power going in. But why is that? Well, you tried to explain it. I think it's the most important thing. that I've learned from you is the capacitance of the transformer and understanding that that's not a transformer per se. You can look at a tray, you can open up your microwave oven, it's not the same. That transformer is sitting in a bunch of oil, it's a capacitor transformer.
Yep.
And when you cut the L1s going in, it just works as a capacitor. It just sits there and holds 110 voltage. You won't lose that 110 voltage until you cut the ground rods. And then after you cut the center tap ground, then it's done. It's just an empty transformer capacitor sitting on a pole. But you don't even need to have the L1 coming in from the line to register that voltage. It just comes off the L2 coil. And that's what I've never actually had the equipment to get up there and test it, but I know a man that's been working on pole transformers for 20 years, and he says that's exactly what happens. And so I think there lies the key to pretty much everything within all the Tesla patents and everything people need to know is that, well, once you've got capacitance of 120, you know, with no amperage, you know, you can do the rest of the math and figure out, well, how does that amperage get there? Like, how is that capacitor excited to be able to constantly dump what it wants? And then, you know, I think that there's, within that is like a viability thing of like, okay, well, teams of people were working to understand that. And I know the difficulty of trying to get pole transformers, and usually they're up in like 15 kVA range, and that's not what I need to be experimenting with. And so, like, I really believe that the engineering that you're talking about, the intelligence of people coming together and using skills that maybe I don't really have the skills to make a faster transformer in a day, but somebody does. And I think that when they see and they work with center tap transformers with the L2 going to ground, step down transformer, then that's a good place to start to understand a dream team coming together and creating, like, say, a prototype, like a smaller transformer, something that, you know, is rated at less than 1 kVA, you know, because that's still a lot of power. But it's proof of concept, I mean, and then it's not that dangerous either. So making a homemade transformer and then figuring out how that could actually be set down in oil and turn into a capacitor transformer, and then start looking at those videos like you're showing about how they, you know, bond it all together, and they bond to the outside, and they bond to the ground, and then you see, well, if you could make a little pop size tin can like that, you could probably get a pretty decent amount of juice out of it.
Yeah, I gotta address a comment in the chat room, because this is basically explains the problem that we got going on. Anon6047 in the chat room said, my electricity teacher at my trade school says Tesla is a lot of mythology. And so that's the problem right there. You've got teachers out there who don't understand anything about energy. They don't understand anything about physics or science or anything. All they understand is what that book says, period. And anything that steps outside that book, they don't get it. Tesla showed everybody something ridiculously simple. And the simplicity of it is a switch. A light switch. He showed them something so ridiculously simple that had an amazing anomaly behind it that not only would amplify the voltage in any given system depending on how fast you flip that switch, but he also gave us radio communication, telegraph, wireless energy. He gave us everything that we're using right now is because of Tesla's technology. Everything. And yet a teacher would tell a student that Tesla is a lot of mythology. You see the problem there?
Well, I do, but I mean, to go back to your point as a chef, it's like, well, I've gone to school to be a chef. Like, there's teachers that are still teaching that MSG, monosodium glutamate, is like a good alternative to salt. Okay, that it's not. Okay, we know it's not. Okay, there's people still teaching that, you know, vegetable oil is better than lard. Well, we know it's not. Refined vegetable oils, they have, you know, minerals, they're not as good. They're hard on your blood, but it's not as good as lard. But look at what's going on in the movement of food. Well, people believe that these kind of things, like people are going into all natural diets, they're being very successful. There's huge parts of the market opened up all over the world because people are eating healthier and more local and things like that. But they're still teaching in culinary school, like, they're still teaching that, no, they don't teach that. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, there is, and there always will be, that kind of a thing where now there's other culinary schools opening up that are just focusing on, like, health and how to get nutrition into the food and how to cook real healthy. And because when you're cooking, you're in control of your health. I mean, every time you heat up oil in a pan to 500 degrees, you've destroyed that oil and made basically a carcinogenic substance that you're going to ingest. And it's like, well, we know that, but we teach that. You see?
Well, that's another thing. You just said something that just reminded me of something I was talking to somebody about yesterday. The oil in your car. Do you know that you don't even have to get any dirt in that oil in order to turn it black? Did you know that?
Yeah, it's the gas does it, right?
No, not you don't even have to get any carbon mixture.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, at certain temperatures, actually, there's if you jump on YouTube and look up, different types of oil experiments, you'll find one where a guy takes, how clean is your oil really? And he'll take a test tube of different brands of motor oil, and he'll hit it with a heat source, and you'll watch as that basically cooks that and turns it black. So part of the blackness that's actually in your oil in your car is from the temperature that your engine got to and basically cooked that oil. And so now the chemistry of that oil has actually changed, where it's not as even black oil will still lubricate, but will it lubricate as good as fresh oil? You see what I'm saying? So if you're running your vehicle at 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, for extended periods of time, and your oil's getting blacker and blacker and blacker, eventually you got to have your oil changed. Otherwise, that crud builds up in your filter system, and then it slows down your oil pump, and you can't get enough oil circulating through there to keep all this stuff lubricated. But a lot of people don't even understand that that's even possible, that just with the heat alone, you can turn your oil black in your car. So if you take and figure that out, and you can regulate that temperature to never allow it to get past the point where it actually begins to cook, like you explained the other oil that you was talking about. Are you seeing where I'm going with that?
Oh, yeah.
You're destroying your food by cooking it too hot, and the oil, the quality of the oil in there, and basically it's like popcorn. You can cook popcorn until it's black. Basically, it'll catch on fire. But certain stages of popcorn will actually taste different depending on the temperature at which you cook it and how long you cook it for. You can actually get different flavors out of the same exact popcorn just by how you cook the doggone stuff. Am I wrong?
Not true.
So there's a happy medium in there. There's a sweet spot. But, these things, like you said, they're not teaching it in school. I teach people how there are probably some chefs out there who get it. There are probably some chefs out there who understand that at this perfect temperature, for this perfect time, with the precise amount, of this whatever you call it, what's the stuff they put in there, like clove and whatever?
Flavors,
whatever. the spices, that's what I was trying to get to come out of my brain. Put the right chemistry together and you got a wonderful tasting meal. They ain't no different than doing anything what we're doing when we're engineering things to work right. We got enough knowledge right now to engineer perfect, efficient machines where ain't nothing gets wasted. Nothing at all gets wasted. There's a use for everything that you're doing. off of whatever type of fuel you choose to run it on. But they don't teach that in school. And when you start to say anything like what I'm saying right now, anyone who you question their belief system, whether the earth is flat or round or anything like that, you've been told all your life the earth is round, so it must be round. All the science says it's round. Never mind the fact that nobody's ever been far enough away to find out for themselves, so they're basically calling each other all kinds of filthy names, arguing about whether it is or isn't. I don't care whether it is or isn't. And truthfully, I don't even know whether it is or isn't. Until I get far enough back to see physically for my own self, be able to fly around this thing in a spaceship or whatever, till I'm out there and I'm looking and I'm physically able to observe, I can't be a good witness to the fact that this is what it was just because somebody said and it sounded right. But without the engineers, without the other talents, you know, you got somebody comes up with an idea and somebody who's able to put that idea on paper, somebody's able to put it into a CAD program for a piece of machinery to be able to 3D print or whatever. Without all these different individuals deciding that they want to see whether or not this is really seriously possible, using everything we know, the one guy is just shouting down the sewer pipe because, you know, hoping that somebody at the other end is going to hear him and start building the doggone thing. We got a catalytic converter on our car for a reason. Because the car is inefficient. It wastes fuel. And the people that say that, you know, you've got all these pollution emissions coming out of the tailpipe, and so you've got to put that down there to clean up your car. Well, how about you don't put that down there to clean up your car? How about you just properly engineer the engine from the get-go and only use the amount of fuel necessary to get the job done?
Well, there's a lot of people that are like you and maybe exactly like me too. Like, well, I've got somewhat of a mechanical mind and different things, but I don't have the exact technology or skill set to do what you're speaking on. That's kind of why I like watching these videos that come out of Malaysia and Africa. I don't think that these people are making these videos so that they can get 100,000 hits and then all the people in their country try to go get junk and put it together and it doesn't work. You know what I mean? That's not their intention behind these videos.
Yeah.
You know, these people live in different lifestyles than we live. And so, you know, when I watch somebody and then so I look at the video and I say, okay, well, you know, I got a busted washing machine that's got a motor in it. Thankfully, I don't throw stuff out too much. And I call down to the pawn shop, and they've got a busted generator. They don't want to work on the motor. It's too far gone. But, you know, they gave me that generator head for $50. And it's like, you know, well, I'm looking at the rest of this design here from Lays. I'm looking at a start capacitor for that washing machine motor. And then I'm looking at an excitation capacitor on that generator head. Okay, it looks like about $20. So I'm looking at $70 for making my own. And this seemed to me like, okay, well, I'm not that mechanically inclined, but I can mount two motors on a board next to each other, or a generator and a motor, and put a pulley on it.
Yeah.
I can do that, you know what I'm saying? And I can take that generator apart and take that, you know, that center winding that they use for energizing, you know, and excitation. I can take it apart and put a capacitor on that, and I know how to put a start capacitor on a washing machine motor. So,
if those folks would listen to guys like Gerard Morin, who he doesn't have near the patience I got, so he gets on there and he cusses like a sailor, man. I can't even stand listening to him most of the time because he's aggravating as heck. But nonetheless, he talked about how the different way of using energy is one of the ways that I was explaining to you about the capacitors and the reasons why you can actually use capacitors to change that energy, to slow it back down and to, you know, have a actual storage deal for, you know, turning that back into usable energy again. The system that you just explained about taking the washing machine motor and a generator head and running that generator, if you was to attempt to use that generator head the exact same way that you would use a gasoline generator head, unless you had the driver for that motor, would it have enough torque to actually put out enough wattage to make a difference at the end? Those washing machine motors are powerful. They're direct drive pulse DC washing machine motors, and connected to a generator head would have enough torque to where you could actually run some stuff off of it. But the fact
is the gentleman in Malaysia that made his YouTube video, is he just looking for that couple hundred thousand hits to get some quick money, and then everybody in his country wastes their time and money while they're already poor, and then everybody hate him for being like, why would you put this video out here, and I went and tried to do all this? And then you look at the Africans video, it's 45 minutes long, and you can tell it's an official teaching video. Now, it's damn hard to understand that broken English, but he's doing it with a 12-volt motor.
Yep.
So he takes the generator apart. Instead of just running the excitation for excitation alone, he runs it over to a 12-volt battery and uses that as like a capacity. He's like, don't worry about the amps on this battery. He's like, as long as it's a 12-volt battery, it could be a car, it could be a marine, it could be anything. It's being used as like a filter off the generator to run the primary motor. And I was like, well, I understand that. So, you know, I mean, it can be done with a 12-volt motor. It could be done with a 120-volt motor. You can tell them the Malaysian gentleman, that's just what they have there. He has a washing machine motor. And he's showing you, I've got this, I'm running a generator, and I'm pulling about a 2,000-watt load off the top. And that would equal to me about 3,500 watts, which wouldn't say that he's really pulling way more off that motor than it says it can, but I think with his excitation capacitor, you know, that adds to a little bit less drag when he's pulling that load.
Well, see, and, you know, that's the key right there, is using that energy in a different fashion than you were before. So instead of people trying to make one self-loop itself, understand that whatever energy you're putting in there, if you're using this energy in a different fashion, you can make that thing so incredibly efficient that it doesn't matter if you do have to recharge the battery every so many hours or whatever. Who cares? As long as you're getting the work done that you need. You see what I'm saying? You're actually generating more power than you're actually needing. What Gerard Morin did was he took that 2,500 watt generator, and because he understood how this storage dang worked with the transformer, he pumped all that energy from the 2,500-watt generator into a 50 kV transformer, because he understood the capacitor values of it and that this was a huge tank, and so you could dump a lot of energy into it before that thing ever got full and started slowing you down. And then he took that 50 kV transformer and dropped it down into a 25 kV transformer, which was brilliant. I did a video called Unsubscribe that shows the same process. If people would have paid attention to what I was saying, they would have understood exactly why Gerard was saying what he was saying. As long as that 50 kV transformer never goes empty, then that 25 kV transformer, since it's a smaller container to store power in, would continuously stay full. And then you can run your load off of that, which you're not putting that load directly onto the generator. You see what I'm saying here?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's why some of these guys out there that are doing these, they're working because they understand how to pull that energy back off of that without causing the standard drawback that you'd get from your gasoline engine running a generator head. Then you put it under a load, then it actually lets the electron flow go right back into the same generator, acting like a brake, causing that gas generator motor to have to work harder to get.
Well, I can agree completely with that, but you know, then again, I'm looking at feasibility again. Like, I'm thinking, well, a generator that actually works, then, you know, the giant KVA transformer, that dude's experiment's a couple $1,000 reproduced. But I think that, like I explained with the washing machine motor running a generator and then a 2,000 watt load, like, well, say you had to buy, you couldn't get quite the deal I got, and I did it for $70, I got the parts. But like, what about, you had to pay $100, you know, even with those, the giant transformer cans, the bare minimum scrap price on those is a couple hundred. They don't want people getting access to 50 kVA transformers, in my opinion.
No,
it's like,
no, but if you could get some aluminum scrap metal, And you could get some PVC plumbing. You can make a smaller version of the same exact transformer. It's, you know, it's not super expensive to make a really powerful capacitor. It's ridiculously simple to make a capacitor once you understand what a capacitor actually is. All you're talking about is two plates and whatever dielectric you want to use in between there. It depends on how much power you want to be able to store in it as how what type of dielectric you got. Glass is the best dielectric because it has the highest breakdown voltage, which means that between those two plates, if you got a piece of glass in there, it takes a lot of voltage in order to be able to leap across and short those plates out. So that means that you can store a lot of power in a glass capacitor where you couldn't store in, like, say, a wax paper or, you know, style aluminum foil style capacitor, because that wax paper has a breakdown point that is so much lower than that glass that if you put too much power to it, it'll burn a hole right through the dielectric and short it out. And so your capacitor is now bad. Once you understand what the dielectric is to begin with, then you could understand that the air itself can be used as a dielectric. You could have these two plates either really super close together, where it has very little air that it has to overcome to go across there, or you could have it even farther apart. Like, your plates could be as far as an inch or so apart, and until you reach a high enough voltage difference between the positive and the negative plate, and it wasn't able to leap across that gap, you would be storing a lot of power in between there. Once that one of them got so pressurized that it was able to ionize the air between those two plates, even that one would short itself out. You see what I mean? And that's why the Tesla coil does what it does. Whenever you're pumping all that energy up on top of that top load, it's pressurizing that, putting all that energy on top of that top load. It keeps pressurizing it, and until it gets powerful enough to actually ionize the air to make a path to ground, you don't lose none of that energy. It's right there stuck to that top load. If you come over there and put your finger anywhere in the general vicinity, you're going to get laid out because you just shorten the gap. When you figure that out right there, then the capacitor is the easiest part of the entire process. It's a storage part, because all you're doing is allowing electrons to be stored on a higher potential on one side than on the opposite side. And since those two plates want to balance themselves out, you got a terminal like at each end of your battery, and the only reason why those batteries don't short out is because those terminals are far enough apart. But if you took a regular lead acid battery and you use static charge, and you charge that lead acid battery, if that electrolyte in between there is able to break down sooner, it'll actually arc inside the battery. But if that electrolyte isn't able to break down until the voltage is high enough to ionize the air between those two battery terminals being as far apart as they can, the explosion that you would get out of that thing from the electrical discharge would be mind-blowing. Does that make sense to you?
Well, yeah, it does.
It's all about how you're using the energy. That's the only thing is, you know, and this is why these folks keep failing, because they keep trying to loop these things back to themselves. If you want to loop it back to itself, then you have to take one of the things out of the equation, like the doggone switch that the Bedini made, where it basically switches the batteries from one battery to the next. If it's connected to that system in any way, it'll allow that system to loop back to itself. If you just use the Bedini motor to charge this battery over here, and then when that battery gets fully charged, a relay kicks over that battery to the next battery and charges that battery. Meanwhile, you could actually be using the power off of the first battery for whatever work you want done. And then when that battery gets too low, then it will kick over to the next battery in line. And that process, you'll have batteries. Imagine a circle of 12-volt car batteries. And you're charging one at a time. You're using power off of the one behind it. And so when that battery gets fully charged, it'll go to the next one to start charging it. When that battery gets fully charged, it'll go to the next one. Meanwhile, you're drawing power off of the batteries that are fully charged. When they get low, it'll kick the charging system on and separate that unit from you. You're not actually drawing from the same system that you're charging from. That's the problem with all the modern day generators, the electric motor generators, is because the moment you try to pull power off of the same one you're charging from, you're using too much energy too fast and it's not able to keep up, and so therefore it eventually runs itself down. But with that switching system that will recognize the voltage of the battery or capacitor bank, whichever one you got, then when you're charging from your device, it's not pulling power from the device or the battery being charged. It's pulling power from the battery that was already charged. And then when that one gets low, then they will switch. So they'll separate each time. You see what I mean?
Well, I do. And I see where you're coming from, especially in regard to the gasoline engine or even like a engine or these motors from an old washing machine. But I think that once you get into the brushless DC technology that they're selling out of China, it's like the amount of torque that they have for the amount of wattage going in, it's there in their math. I mean, you can loop a brushless DC motor to run a generator any day of the week if you can afford it.
I honestly believe it's possible. All right, to self-loop, all right, that which goes against the laws of physics. I honestly believe it's possible to self-loop, but if you don't do it in the right order, you're going to invoke the lens effect, and then it's going to be using a little bit more energy each time until it finally wears that battery down, shuts the battery off, or whatever your power source. But that doesn't mean you can't put a secondary system such as a solar power or wind generator to be charging your next battery in line. That's all I'm saying.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's easy to overcome for even that. I agree 100%. It's sad to me that I think that a lot of people have made self-looping systems a lot of different ways and that there's not a lot of credit given to them because, I mean, for a while, I haven't wanted to replicate any of them until recently. But once I've started to think about what you're saying about Gerard Moran's experiment, when he's got some potential and then he's using it to fill one, like he's started his own little substation. He's using some potential to fill one thing to fill a smaller thing.
Yep.
And then he's got pressure there. And it's like, well, if the self loop, I understand, like, it might not be the most, right now, like, well, we're just thinking math in our head, we're not going to be able to get a lot out of that, or, you know, it's going to draw it down, or it just won't be that efficient. But it's like, well, think about if it was a self-looping motor that you weren't really looking for the wattage off the end, you just needed that generator head to give you that initial pressure to start, like, the experiment that Gerard's doing. It's like, well, then it becomes invaluable because, you know, with his experiment, your primary mover is still going to be fossil fuels or whatever, you know, electricity, whatever people are saying that's destroying the earth or whatever. And they'd be like, I'd be thinking, well, okay, you know, that's why if your primary mover is a self-loop, it's like, well, then, yeah, it might be a small self-loop, but look what Gerard's showing you. Even if you have a small self-loop, the fact that you've got a 60-hertz sine wave coming off there,
yep,
I mean, you can do a lot with it. And, you know, you're just not really going to get your 60-hertz sine wave off of your average, like, you know, inverter and things. If you want to run appliances, you don't want your appliances getting damaged just because you're trying to get off the grid or save a buck from the electric company. It's like, you know, you're gonna damage all your equipment trying to do it unless you've got a pure, in my opinion, a pure 60-hertz sine wave anyway.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you can slow it back down into that. But see, here's another thing that the new flyback technology that they've been using in modern day microwaves, people don't realize that there's not even a transformer in there anymore. It's an air core transformer. It's like a Tesla coil. Alright? They're using flyback technology in there. When you induce a current into a coil of wire, it produces a strong magnetic field. Okay, we use that. All right. Well, that strong magnetic field and the changes in that magnetic field is what actually energizes the secondary coil on your transformer. So you're using all that. But what people aren't realizing that as soon as that 60 hertz pulse is going in and out like that, it goes out, makes a strong field, and the field expands and collapses. They're not drawing energy from the flyback of that. They're not drawing the back EMF that is released from that transformer. If they were, you would get a two-for-one action. You'd get the power on the way out, and you'd get the power on the way back. So if you had a back-to-back transformers, and you allowed the flyback to literally leap across the spark gap for when you energize the primary, and that sent the wave across the secondary. As that wave is actually collapsing, it builds up enough energy on the flyback, because if you ever measure the flyback or the back EMF off of a transformer, you're talking about hundreds of voltage. You may only be putting in 120 volts AC or whatever, but the flyback on that from that field collapsing that fast is astronomical voltage coming backwards. And if you allow that to jump off of that, when that field collapses, if you allow it to jump across the spark gap, when that energy goes across, it will pulse that primary on the second transformer again. So you could actually have these two transformers bouncing off of each other. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, that's deep.
So, because if you don't believe what I'm saying, folks, take a 9-volt battery and any transformer. I don't care which transformer you get. Just take any 9-volt battery and hold your thumb, both your thumbs on that, on both wires, and connect it to the battery. You won't feel nothing when you first connect that. But the moment you release one of those thumbs up off of that, you're going to get the crud shocked out of you. That's the back EMF. That's how much voltage is coming back out of that coil, because you just pressurized that coil and produced a massive magnetic field. And the only thing copper wire needs in order to produce electricity is a change in that polarity of the magnetic field. So you just pushed it one way, that's one change, and then when you released your thumbs off of that, that's the second change, and you get a rush backwards as that field slams shut and basically gives you an electrical shock. So we could build transformers that would actually use what Tesla showed using spark gaps technology. And with the spark gap, anytime you got a spark gap, you also have the Venturi effect occurring at the same exact time. If you put the back of your hand near any spark gap as it's getting ready to discharge from one to the other, you'll actually feel an ionic wind being generated right on the back of your hand. The hairs on your back of your hand will stand up. Because it's charging up. It's getting ready to leap across that deal. It's ionizing the air between the spark gap to the other side, and you'll feel an ionic wind being generated right before that discharge. And it actually has an audible sound when it does snap across there. Pow, 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 just like that. So you know there's a lot of power involved there. And so all it is how we're actually guiding this energy back and forth. When you figure that one out right there, it's so ridiculously simple, it'll blow your doors off.
That kind of reminds me of the fact that, I mean, in true, like, resonation and symbiosis, I mean, the loop can be made solid state with just the right lengths of wire.
Yeah.
You know what I'm, like, you can get, like you're saying, you can have two transformers in a way, or two motors charging them, like running themselves, just based on that open and close being timed correctly.
Somebody said, "Do you know anything about the cosmic induction generator that Eric P. Dollard? I'm very interested in that little spiral plasma thing he was talking about, but I don't have the money to buy all his books. Got any PDFs?" Laugh out loud. There's probably in Steven's resource links, there's probably some links to Eric Dollard. There's tons of information out there, and I'm sure we could dig you up some PDFs. I don't know if I have any stashed away or not. I'll look around and see if I can find them. If I can, I'll post them if Stephen hasn't already posted them. And he said, "Old man, speaking of flybacks, my electricity teacher was teaching us about transformers, and I asked about a flyback transformer, and he never heard of a flyback transformer." See, that's another thing, too. I've actually talked to doctors in the medical field about alternative types of medicines like the hyperbaric oxygen chamber, and they, while they may have heard about something about it, they didn't know anything any more than what they, you know, heard the basics of. And so, you, when you sit there and try to explain them the benefits of what this actual treatment would have been good for their patient, they don't want to humor it. They'd rather cut and radiate somebody and wipe out their immune system than to pay attention to science and physics. Even though they're supposed to be there to do no harm. And the same doggone thing happens in the school systems with all the educators that are teaching their kids about, you know, electronics. Sure, I could sit around and memorize all the color codes on resistors and transistors and all this different kind of stuff. All these specs and all that. I could sit around and basically memorize what their purposes is for. But if I'm not willing to think outside the box, then what the heck is the point? All I can do is what's already been done. A transistor is an amazing thing. It's a fast-acting switch. And if you understand how it functions, then you understand its limitations. If you can figure out the thermal breakdown of that transistor, you can ensure that it never even goes bad. We've got all the tools. All we need is those folks that's willing to step outside the box and ignore what the heck the doggone teacher says. Try it before you deny it. That's the simple of it. Back EMF, I can't believe that they don't know what a flyback driver is. Basically, you got a real simple coil system with maybe six turns on it with a center tap on there, and as the energy is being pulsed in, that center tap, it's going two different directions. It's bouncing back and forth, and it's amplifying that signal, which is the primary, and the secondary being wound the way that it is with lots of turns of very thin wire makes that doggone thing ramp that voltage up to really high voltage, high frequency. That's how they're able to send that energy into the magnetron of the microwave at such a speed that whenever you took the first portion of the microwave, which essentially is a light bulb, and you put heat to that element inside that magnetron, that high frequency wave being produced by the modern day flyback driver inside the microwave oven not only makes it more efficient energy wise, but it has enough energy to go in there and knock electrons off of that tungsten and spin them around inside that vacuum with a magnetic field producing the microwave that cooks your food. All you got to understand is the physics of what the heck mechanically is going on, and you can resolve every bit of what you want. Those 60 hertz is slow. 50 hertz is slow. You get up there into the megahertz range and gigahertz and all that, it's still the same doggone energy. It's just moving so incredibly fast that you can move energy from point A to point B rapidly in high quantities, that if you tried to use this power when it came back on the other side, it set you and your house both on fire. So, you gotta slow it back down. With those washing machine motors that you were talking about, Ted, take one of those washing machine motors and hook it up to a transmission that's able to go from low gear all the way up to highway speed gears. Right? Find you like an old four-cylinder style transmission that starts off in low gear, and you'll notice that whenever you got this thing in the lowest gear, which has the most torque, it will produce a strong current, alright? And then whenever you shift gears, you'll start losing your current, but you'll start gaining in voltage. And when you get up to third gear, the voltage will get higher, the current will get lower. And then when you get up to fourth gear, higher voltage, lower current. And when you finally get up to fifth gear, where you're got that thing cooking along at 50,000 RPMs, you'll be putting out a streamer of voltage that'll blow your doors off, sending arcs out of that thing. There's a guy that hooked one to a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton engine, and he had a chicken stick hold the wire out there, and he's pulling these huge arcs off of the doggone washing machine motor. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a heck of a lot of power. And so that washing machine motor is capable of doing a heck of a lot more than people realize. Not only does it have a massive amount of torque if you use it with the standard pulse DC circuit that is capable of overcoming, because if you think about it, inside your washing machine, there's a lot of water weight, wet clothes and stuff like that that thing has to overcome in order to be able to turn it, yet it does. And it'll do it for years. As long as the circuit's good in there, as long as nothing shorts out, that washing machine will do its job for years. And so if it's able to turn a huge drum of wet clothes, then it's able to turn a generator head. Then if you understand how to pull that energy off of it so that washing machine motor doesn't have to work any harder than it normally would have to turn that generator head, you basically just let that generator head freewheel and you pull that energy off like Gerard or myself has been saying forever and a day. That motor will do exactly what you said it would do. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do. Yeah, I mean, I believe in the Malaysian too. Like, I see what he's doing, and I know the dynamics of it, and I believe it's possible.
Well, I've been trying to point out to people for a long time. When I talk about plasma technology, what I'm showing them isn't some sort of hoodoo, voodoo, you gotta love your reactor kind of thing. It's fact that when you energize this gas, you've got electrons being released. There's all kinds of chaos going around in there, and everything's slamming into each other, and it's producing friction, which in turn is producing heat, which in turn is producing light. But it's not just heat and light that's coming out of that. You got now radiant energy coming out. That's why if you go back and look at some of my videos when I'm running plasma inside these vacuum tubes, and you'll get these people that are saying, oh, well, you're probably radiating yourself. You're probably generating X-rays. Aren't you worried you're going to give yourself cancer and all this kind of stuff? And I'm looking at them like, oh, my God, what is wrong with these people? I just showed them how I took a form of energy and transmitted it into multiple forms of energy. When you got visible light, what's involved with visible light? Do you know?
Heat.
Well, yeah, you got heat and you got photon releases going on. How's this energy traveling here and there? How can you contain it? What could you do with all this energy that's coming out of this doggone thing? It's crazy. These people that are doing Tesla coils and Slayer exciters, they haven't figured out how to get these things to transmit further than they do. They can get 20 feet maybe if they ramp it up to a whole bunch of input voltage, but they haven't figured out how that wave is actually traveling and the expansion and collapsing of these waves as they're wanting to make this wireless energy transfer like Tesla was trying to tell everybody back in the day. When you pulse that wave is going to be interfered by whatever medium it's being transmitted through, which even the air itself is slowing it down. And so it starts off as a microwave, and then it becomes a slower wave, and then a slower wave, and it ain't no longer a microwave after it gets about a foot out of your doggone magnetron. It ain't a microwave anymore. The more it bounces around inside the deal, it'll keep its momentum for a little while. And since water is a dipole molecule, every time one of them waves comes through, it's going to rock that water molecule back and forth. But A lot of people are afraid of microwave ovens because they think they're going to get their face irradiated. There's a doggone Faraday cage right in the glass of it, so you can actually see in there. By the time it comes out of that doggone through that Faraday cage, it's no longer a microwave. It's already been slowed down by the glass. It's been slowed down by the Faraday cage itself. And so it ain't a microwave when it comes out anymore. They're not near as dangerous as what people think they are. I mean, you go to the dentist, they're going to x-ray your face to find out what your tooth looks like and all that kind of stuff. How many people do you see dropping dead after they come out of the dentist office? And then it's like, well, no, years later you're going to have cancer and tumors and everything like that. All right. Give me a headache, man. So what are you thinking about?
Well, I mean, you know, as you wanted to make a dream team and everything, I mean, the idea, in my opinion, is like kind of like water comes together, like when you put droplets of water, water molecules like form together.
Yep.
And they, once they're flowing, they got energy behind them, and it's nice. It's like, well, the notion is, it's like, I think there's a lot of people that want to be on your dream team. It's just maybe we need the correct direction, you know, and there's so much direction that, you know, a person like me can be indecisive about all that.
Yeah. Well, need somebody who's like the person that puts together like conventions and stuff like that. You got an organizer. Some people out there are really good at organizing. They're really good at communicating with people, a concept of actually building a dream team and bringing them together. Me personally, I got my mechanical deal. I might have a little bit of gift of gab because I can't shut up half the time. But I ain't motivating enough, apparently, to be able to inspire people to come together and do that. You know, Jermaine's in the chat room down there, and Jermaine is a manufacturer. He could build stuff. Kid's incredible. All right? Now, he's obviously a dream team member. And all these people, if you bring all these talents together, if you seriously want to get the doggone, once and for all, an answer to alternative energy, give me 30 days with the most brilliant minds that we together can gather up. 30 days in any lab setting where we got tools that we need to work with, and I guarantee you we'll come up out of there with exactly what we promised.
Does it have to be done in person? Can't we all just do it together from our homes?
Well, yeah. If we Skyped in and I had the tools to make something that you didn't have and you needed a particular deal and you said, well, can you get this to me within a day or so? And I put it together to whatever it is that you need and I ship it to you. You know, and then you ship the next piece on down the line to everybody else. And if we had to, you know, between several different countries, pitch in on shipping and handling and move this device from one person to the next to get the doggone pieces put together. If that's what it took, it could be done.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's just, I'm going insane, Ted, trying to talk to the world to tell them about things that I've researched in my life and that other people's researched, and put all this information down on the table for people to run with. I mean, open their minds. You know, even something as ridiculous as this whole entire flat earth, round earth debate going out there, I honestly thought that why these people out there actually arguing back and forth, they would have to put their best science to the test to prove their argument. And that was a ray of sunlight because nobody was doing that before. They were calling each other names, and they were saying, oh, you're stupid, and that's against the laws of thermodynamics, blah, blah, this is why it won't work. And they discouraged so many people that were interested in alternative energy that came up the deal wanting to learn about stuff. And so every time they come here and talk to me, I would try to inspire them to step outside that box, forget what the book said, try it out for yourself, and if it doesn't work, then come back and we'll discuss on why it didn't work, how we can make it work, or whether or not it's just something that we tried, it failed, we put that in the pile of things that we tried, but we don't discard it, because even in that process, there's still something in that thing that worked. Otherwise, we wouldn't have took it that far.
So, well, what if as Dream Team folks, we like made an effort to try to find junk scrap generator heads so everybody had that to work with to start?
That would be great.
Because that's something that seems like if you go to a scrap yard, like people scrap generators and the generator heads don't go bad as far as I know.
They don't.
Unless you damage the brushes or something, you know, crazy's going on there, then... You know, I'd say like 99% of all generators that get thrown out are because the motor went bad.
Yep, that's it.
And so that makes it, like, I might not be completely feasible for everybody to instantly grab one, but I mean, if we were working on a similar project, all in different locations, then we would be able to have our dream team right now. Like, if you told me or I told you, like, let's start a week to decide we're like, We want to do a project that runs the generator head. If everybody could get this on the dream team, like a 3,000 to 4,000 watt generator head, that's a nice start.
Yeah.
And I believe we can use almost any kind of motor. You might have somebody that has an old moped or some one of them electric moped looking things that kind of broke down in your neighborhood. Like, buy that thing from them. It's got a beautiful motor in it. You know what I'm saying?
And
beautiful
if you
motor.
Can get one that has a gearbox in it that will go, you know, from, you know, low gear all the way up to, I don't know how fast some of these little, gas-powered mopeds and stuff will go, but some of them will go up to 35, 40 miles an hour. So if you understand the RPMs that that's able to generate to actually get going, imagine coupling a motor to a generator head, and you start it off in low speeds and measure the output of the generator, and then you bring it up at high speeds, then that's when people will start realizing that you can actually get high voltage, high frequency out of the same generator head that you're actually normally trying to pull current out. So if you got a 2,500 watt generator head, that doesn't mean that that's all that thing can actually produce as far as voltage goes. If you spin that any one of those generator heads up past 50,000 RPMs, you're going to be shooting lightning bolts out the end of that thing. And
well, I understand that, and that would make sense to me that, well, you don't necessarily have to try to make them into a closed loop. You can start with whatever you want. I mean, you could even just have it run at the 3,000 RPMs it needs to make current, and then just get your batteries that come with the moped, and then work with all the videos you've shown about how you can keep those batteries charged most definitely. You put a system like that's out in your yard, you may even watch the Free Thinkers videos, you watch that. You're telling me that can't keep the batteries for a moped charged?
Oh, I guarantee you can.
So you can be running that little generator head off your moped thing, no problem.
And then when you're pulsing transformers with this thing, you're getting that back EMF, I bet there's majority of the people don't realize that when you pulse an electric motor, you're also getting a back EMF. So on the actual generator head itself, when that field is being induced, you're catching the power as it collapses and it comes out. That's the electricity you use. On an electric motor, when you're energizing those coils and they're expanding and collapsing, there's back EMF coming off of those electric motors as well that you could actually capture that flyback on the way back. As that motor turns around and that field collapses, the energy that's released from that coil is just wasted right into nothingness. But if you took that energy and you allowed it to leap across a spark gap and to send that energy into another transformer, you see what I mean?
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, even just back to the motor running alone, when you start running it and testing those different voltages at the different RPMs, and then you start, start taking it apart and look, depending on how old your generator is, you're going to have like either a bridge rectifier back in there or some kind of weird sealed chip in epoxy.
Yep.
That you can't tell what it is. And the new ones, it's like I haven't broken one open to figure out what it is, but in an old one, it's a bridge rectifier and a capacitor.
Have you seen the old antique slot car motors?
No.
If you ever get an opportunity, go look at the old style slot car motors and watch them things, man. They were shooting sparks across the brushes like you wouldn't believe. There's a lot of voltage involved in there when those motors are running. And even watching them as they're dragging down the tracks, you'll see little sparks up underneath there, electricity being dragged across there. You can actually smell ozone from them old cars running. When you're sitting there racing them around the track, that style of motor right there shows that there's a whole lot more power involved in that little bitty tiny motor than people realize.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I mean, those motors, once you get them going at a certain speed, they change.
Yep.
They do something weird. Like Gerard Moran saying, once they go so fast, you know, it's more of a frequency thing at that point, and a voltage thing.
Well, the thing is that we're using this energy, and we actually use more energy necessary to do the job than we need, period. We're wasting more energy than we're actually using. So we have to build up a lot of current, a lot of watts, a lot of amps in order to get this power to make this field this strong. But then when we use that energy, we're not catching it on the way back. We're not recycling that energy. So it just basically gets dispersed out into the atmosphere. That's what a lot of these other people who were doing things with flyback drivers and stuff and back EMF, capturing that back EMF. There's so much research out there about how to catch that power on the way back. Now, if you ever look at, take a coil of wire and put it on like a 12-volt battery and tap on there and watch as you pull your hand, one of the wires back, you'll see an arc come off of that thing. And a lot of times before you ever even get that wire even connected, you'll see it leap across that gap to that coil wire before you ever even touched it. So there's a lot of power potential just in the battery itself. You can capture some of that flyback every time you use that battery and put energy back into that plate, back into one of the plates at a higher potential. Imagine you got all this voltage and you're able to put all these electrons back onto that plate right after you get through using them. You're snapping that power right back on that plate, which is keeping that positive plate higher charged than the negative plate, or vice versa, whichever direction you decide to run it in. But nonetheless, you keep one of them plates higher, that battery will never run out. It can't run out. As long as there's a potential difference between the two plates, the power can never, that battery could never go dead. And that battery don't care where the electrons come from. You see what I mean? Just like a coil of wire don't care where the magnetic field comes from. All it's looking for is a change.
I just can't stop thinking about the efficiency of those electric motors and all these scooters and mopeds and, you know, the ones they ride around in Europe, they're practically like, they're like sports cars with their little electric, you know, it's crazy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the battery systems that they're using these days are basically, you know, nickel cadmium, nickel metal hydride, lithium batteries, all these different types of batteries that they got these days are incredibly powerful. And I think that they're actually using somewhat of a capacitor technology in these types of batteries to give them a more of a punch. Now, without reverse engineering an actual battery, you know, you really wouldn't know what's inside of all these batteries. But we do.
Well, I wouldn't want to take apart a lithium battery, but I would never want to do that.
But what we do know is that these batteries are able to turn like cordless drills, and these cordless drills are turning gearboxes that are producing enough torque to drive a screw into a 2x4 multiple times over. That's a lot of power.
Well, man, I mean, these things will take you and like another person up a hill at like, you know, for you're saying 40 miles an hour. You don't think it's going to turn a generator head? Like,
yeah,
it's going to.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it would.
But, well, I mean,
that's
but
all
then
torque.
Just, The interesting thing is how easy it is to get replacement motors for these things, and you can get them rated. They're rated, some of you think 2,000 watts, 1,000 watts. Like, I believe they're going to get a lot more off that generator than what takes to run those little motors. And it's crazy, but I think the math's sitting right there in front of us. It's like, but I don't know. You know, it's like people, I think that's the best. I mean, I just like to follow what the poor people do. The poor people are doing what they can with parts they get. It's like a generator head to me. Like, I can't keep spending money on just, you know, whatever. You know, it's like, eventually you find that, like, junk is the way to do it. Like, people is garbage. Yeah. That's how you can have fun with stuff. It's like, to order anything new, it's like almost ridiculous. But the way that those moped motors are, and you know, being $100 or $200 for some of these brushless motors that have incredible torque and power, it's like, well, huh, you know, that might be a good investment well spent.
Well, there's I took a hard drive motor. I did a video about it as well, and I took a hard drive motor and I spun it up with a Dremel and was able to light up an entire strand that normally takes 120 volts AC. It's actually got a resistor inside there that basically slows down the voltage from the outlet so that you're not getting current flow through there that would burn the LEDs up. So basically it's just using the voltage to light the LEDs up, which makes it more efficient. But nonetheless, you have to slow the power down from the deal so you knock the current down. But I was able to take a doggone hard drive motor and a Dremel and spin that up to about 25,000 or more RPMs. I don't know how fast my Dremel actually goes. It might be up 30, it might even be as high as 40, 50,000 RPMs. I don't know. But I took a little cotton wheel, a buffer wheel, and put it on the top of that doggone freaking hard drive motor and used it to spin that thing around and produce enough energy to light that entire strand. Alright, and then the only words that I got out of people was, oh, well, you just had to, you used more energy than you would have used before because I used the Dremel to do it. Never mind the fact that if you understood gear ratios, you could actually take a smaller motor, a battery powered Dremel, and you can get up high enough RPMs to do the same exact thing. It's all about how you engineer it, doesn't matter. But the fact is that it's the way that you're using that energy, period. So that little tiny amount of copper that's inside of those little hard drive motors, have you ever took one apart and looked inside a hard drive motor?
Yeah.
There's hardly any copper in there. Just little tiny coils. It looks just like basically the equivalence of that washing machine motor that you talked about. It looks just like that. And it's a miniaturized two or three phase motor, essentially. Pulse DC was what it normally ran off of, but when you run that backward as a brushless motor, it turns into a brushless generator.
Oh, well, the washing machine motor I'm talking about is just the standard old-school belt-driven one, like from an old washing machine.
Well, those would work, too. You could actually turn an AC motor into an alternator. If you understand how an alternator functions, you energize one coil, and that change in the magnetic field rotation, you just turn that AC motor into a generator, into an alternator. So, mechanically speaking, those motors are incredibly impressive. The X13s, like Raymond brought one out from me that he got from I can't remember what the guy's name is. Ryan, I think, is where he got it from. Either Ryan or Ryan's friend. But either way, he brought one of those things out, and we were running that thing as a generator. We were basically using a blower motor, like one of those leaf blowers, to spin a turbine that then in turn spun the generator that in turn produced power out the other side. And we were actually producing plasma in a little fluorescent bulb starter. And when the plasma got hot, it hit the little thermal switch inside there, which now allowed current to flow through there. First, it was just the frequency of the same energy that was running the plasma, and up until the point when that thermal switch kicked on and allowed the current to flow through there and lit up a 100-watt, 150-watt light bulb, and that you could see that generator instantaneously drop on its face. But for the time being, it had enough, before it dropped on its face, it had enough current to light that light bulb up. And so if you took multiple systems and did the same exact thing, you could keep a constant flow of current doing just what we were doing, just by allowing this one to drop on its face, that one drops on its face, and down the line, and then you're catching the back EMF off of each one of these after that field collapses and recapturing some of that power. If you want to run it just to produce the plasma for the heat aspect, it doesn't even have to work hard. You see what I'm saying? And then you turn that plasma, which is heat and light energy, back into usable current again. Not to mention the radiant portion of the plasma itself, which is energy. Am I making any sense to you, or does it sound like I'm babbling?
Well, that's where there's too much, there's actually so many options that it's crazy. That's why I'm just gonna stick with my generator head and some motors and try to see what's going on with this and do some testing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'd be willing to work alongside you to help you with the deal. You know,
I see two different people on the YouTube do this in two different countries, you know, out of their junk, and like I say, from watching their videos, I think their heart's correct. It's like, they're not out there. This is not a big profit idea, in my opinion. These are people that are trying to do it, and it's like, I like it.
Do you know anybody who has access to a metal lathe and a press to press on bearings and off bearings?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so if you can get one of those generator motors or whatever, and you can put everything on one solid shaft, like you got your electric motor that you're going to drive your generator head with and put it on one solid shaft, that'll take out all the need for your precision, because they're basically one unit now. I'll have to look it up, but the red line generators that I used on that Electron are they're 120 volts to... Or they're 12 volts to 120 volts at 500 watt AC generators. They're all built on one shaft, and that takes out any wobbling that you might get in the process. So if you got somebody who can build you a custom shaft for that, that'll give you precision for that portion of it. And if you want to try to add a gearbox to it there, and a second shaft, then you'll need to mount that whatever driver motor you're going to put on there, you know, you need to mount that to the electric motor first. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to shift gears and be able to get more torque to start this thing off, and then once you get it up to speed, and then actually use the flywheel, build you a big heavy-duty flywheel, maybe out of an old barbell set, you know, those iron barbells that they used to lift in gym class.
Yeah.
Now you got that big flywheel over there that is assisting you, and once you get that thing up and going, and it gets that momentum going around, it'll help assist that generator head as well. A lot of people don't know that if you didn't have the flywheel in your engine, your engine wouldn't be able to overcome the compression that needed to keep that engine running. Even steam engines had to have a flywheel. But if you add all these pieces of the puzzle, from how the electric motor works, how the gasoline engine works, and then you take the best, which is like the flywheel from one, the transmission, the flywheel, now you can turn that power from that motor, which if you look at actually how much without the transmission, in any vehicle how much horsepower that that engine would actually have on its own. You see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
Like a 3-horse motor can do a lot more work with the proper gear ratio. And if you get that gear ratio down, you can transfer that energy from that electric motor, and you can run it at whichever speed you want in order to get the range of frequency, the hertz range that you want for your output of your electricity on the other side from the deal. It's how fast you're turning that thing is what's going to make the difference. What do you think?
I like it because it's kind of cheap and it's fun. It challenges my, just taking apart the gas motor and getting it off the generator is a challenge. You know what I'm saying? It's like, there's like a crankshaft in there. It's like crazy. But I don't know. It's like, what else are you going to do? But like, I don't really like to watch too much TV these days. So listen to some music or do whatever, and like, spare part generators, work on motors, things like that.
Well, look at old 10-speed bicycles. Those would be a cheap form of transmission, or even old worn out cordless drills. There's a cheap transmission. You know, you're able to either speed the RPMs up or bring torque up, whichever one you need. You can change the head on that. That doggone cordless drill to give you different difference in torque or difference in RPMs. One for just drill, huh?
I'm thinking for my amount of technique and whatever skill set, I'd be like mounting side by side motors on a board and then using belts. So that kind of gives me a little bit of mounting something shaft to shaft. It's gonna be tough. I mean, because. It's just like, but I think with the belts being there and it's easy to get different size pulleys, it's like, well, you don't really, have to work with gear to gear. Like, and then, I always like belts. It's like, even on a tiller, like the old belt driven tiller is like better in my opinion, because, when it goes down, it ain't your motor usually going down. It's the gears, like you tear that thing up and then, it's like, man, if they're a belt, you just go get a new belt. Never any metal shearing, never nothing like that.
I just put a link in Skype to redlinegenerator.com. These are electric motor generators that are actually on the market already. And okay. So the reason why I'm posting that is that if you study how those things are put together, you can find the flaws in the system that would keep that thing from self-looping itself. Because you think about, it's putting out 120 volts AC at 500 watts is the one I got. I got two of them. They take 12 volts DC and they turn it into 120 volts AC at 500 watts. So what would it take for me to almost plug that thing into itself? Like I could plug a 120 volt AC, battery charger, 10 amp battery charger, whatever, onto my battery so that when I'm running this thing, that it would run itself. And then when you realize why it doesn't work, then people will understand why it is that I keep talking about plasma technology, taking that energy away from that generator so that the generator's never working harder than it normally would just to actually turn the head. That's it. It was while it's turning the head, it's actually making electricity.
Right.
And when you try to pull it off in the standard model, you allow the electron flow to go back into that generator head and start acting as a brake on the armature, because now you got the second magnetic field, the lens effect occurring, and you can turn it into a brake. It will actually put enough force down on that, fighting against the first force, that will stop that motor from being able to turn, and your driver motor will actually burn up because it'll get too hot trying to overcome that resistance. But if you ensure that you never meet that resistance and you push whatever that driver motor is capable of spinning that generator at, whatever you get out the other side, and you take that energy away from it, and then use whether it be a battery swapping system or whatever, something to switch that battery and get it out of that circuit. You don't want it to be closed loop. You want that battery to be charged up. Once it's charged up, you want it away from the system, and then the next battery in line comes in to be charged up, and then you want it away from the system, and then all your stored energy comes around, and you're pulling power off of the newly charged batteries. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get that thing to self-loop. You can't put it right in the middle of this deal right here. So whatever these guys are doing with their generator systems, they figured out, like, using capacitors, how to reduce the lens effect that causes that braking problem by sending the energy into a different form. You see what I mean?
Absolutely.
The reason why the Mercury Arc rectifier was able to do what it did and not feed back on itself is because it was basically rectifying that AC current into DC current, pressurizing that, and the stream was so strong in one direction, there was no way that the electrons could flow back in the opposite direction. Unless you stop taking power off of that thing, which one of two things would happen. Either it would pressurize the glass to the extent that the mercury arc rectifier would have exploded, blown up like a balloon, or eventually the power would get so intense on one side, if it couldn't get out of that container, it would have to go back the other direction. It would have no choice. But because they were pulling power off of that thing, they were able to make it out of glass, and it could withstand the abuse. So if you took one of these right here and you were producing electricity with it, and you pulled that energy that you want off of there and then put it into a completely different form, use it to pulse transistors or whatever, some ridiculously light load that in turn is pulsing the transformers that you want to draw it off of, it makes it so that the electron flow can't go back into the initial driving source. That's the key. As soon as you turn a light, plug a light bulb into that thing, you'll hear it bog down. Just like in your automobile, you'll hear it bog down. Muddy hooked a doggone solar panel to the top of his truck and fed it down through a charge controller into his battery, which was a completely secondary system from the deal. And so whenever he used his lights or whatever, he's not putting the electricity back through the alternator, which then in turn makes a secondary load on it and causes that engine to have to work harder. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So move the energy away from the doggone thing. There's actually YouTube videos out there on that. You can see people messing around with them. And if you look at my video called Electron, it's actually in there as well. Those are red line generators. They use them on the back of, like, telephone trucks to, you know, when they're out there working, when the power line's down or something like that, they have to have the voltage to be able to light up lights so they can see what they're doing in the dark. Well, that's what those are for. They got inverters as well, but that's what those particular ones were designed for. And they're not cheap, but you could at least study them and get an idea how you want to build the generator that you're talking about. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I absolutely love it. I mean, there's a lot of people already doing it. That's why I feel like we're at the point now where there's so many different techniques of getting whatever kind of energy or technique you want to do. It's like, well, it's just to try to reproduce them is nice. Well, people say that things don't work, I guess, but I had a lot of success messing around with the Bedini circuit, so...
Well, the Bedini circuit does work!
I know. I understand people get upset about Bedini or whatever, but it's like, well, he was just showing you what he could show you to help you learn what you need to learn, but it's like, you know? I think there's even a lot more to it. I think that when you get the speeds correct and stuff on the Bedini style, you could, in theory, simulate, you know, 60 hertz sine wave, no problem. But it's like, well, while you're getting your back EMF spike, too, to keep the motor going, which is real interesting. Yeah. But, you know, like, whatever.
Well, the whole thing that...
You could make it a monopole motor, and I think that's because, you know, if you make it a bipole, like, you're going to get a full sine wave.
The Bedini motor and the circuit that he showed a multitude of different frequencies of energy all in one device. And that's what he tried to explain to people. These folks couldn't figure out what the heck it was that he was talking about. But you could see where... When I took a doggone electric motor and I ran it from two negative poles of two completely separate batteries, and they didn't understand what it was that he was talking about, it doesn't matter. If one of those batteries on the negative post has a higher potential than the opposite battery, what happens to the electrons? They flow from the higher potential to the lower potential, right?
Absolutely.
So you just turned two negatives into a positive and a negative and was able to run a DC motor with it. That's how he was able to charge the third battery.
Absolutely. And I think, well, I try to send you their two links through the Skype thing, and it's like, the thing I like about these two videos is, number one, they're using junk to make it happen, and number two, it's like, they're both showing that off that generator head, if you put your own capacitor for excitation, you're going to be able to achieve this. It's like, well, I understand. I feel like I understand what's going on with that. It's like the bridge rectifier was more, like, from back in the old generators, it was more efficient, you know, than the ones that we put on now. They're a tiny bit less efficient, I believe, those little excitation things. But then the ultimate efficiency is just to get the right voltage capacitor, the right, you know, microfarads, and then just have that thing on there. And that's like a common thread I'm seeing between these folks that are working with garbage, getting power out of it, is that they've decided to excite the generator head a little extra. And I think when you just do that a little bit with that capacitor, it seems like people are getting some pretty serious results. So where maybe if you were to just take, you know, your standard old school washing machine motor, belt driven, and hook it right up to a generator head, you might get it to run, but then have some problems on the loop. But if you put that extra capacitor in that generator head, you know, I mean, the excitation of that generator seems to have an effect. Like, it wouldn't, and you know, a man described to me once, he's like, you know, everything is limited by the cost. It's like, people want to keep costs down, they want to keep production down. It's like, it would explain to me why they would put a tiny little capacitor and bridge rectifier in there to excite. Yeah. Whenever these guys are putting in a bigger capacitor, it looks like instead of a 10-cent capacitor, it's more like a $10 capacitor. Well, you know, I understand that. Like, well, it might not be a big conspiracy to keep the price down on stuff, but you can go ahead and modify that a little bit. Put that bigger capacitor in there, and the loop still doesn't work. Look what the guy's doing in that video. Well, he's got himself a capacitor on the front end. He's got a start-run capacitor on there. I can't tell where it is exactly. It's in different language.
If you make sure that energy can't loop back on itself, you can move it in the direction that you want to run that motor. That's why I kept talking about the spark gap deal, because when it jumps across that spark gap, if the voltage is high enough to leap across there, the electrons aren't going back across the spark gap. They're going one direction. You got DC current. So just by using that little bit of knowledge right there, you could actually turn a motor just using nothing but a spark gap. Every time that thing pulses. See what I mean?
Yeah, that's a beautiful concept.
And so, even in a capacitor, it's how you're using that capacitor. You could use a capacitor in a couple different ways. You could either use it like a battery, or you could use it with a spark gap and have that capacitor charge up. When it gets fully charged up, it will actually discharge itself across there. If you go look at my old video called Shaziz Coil, you'll see that there's like four separate spark gaps on there. I was actually able to tune these spark gaps to different speeds, so that you'd have them, it's like popcorn. And every time it hit pulse back into the deck, it would put that energy right back into the same coil and do just like what the Tesla coil was doing on the primary. It would ramp that power up, and before the field got a chance to collapse, it hit it again and again and again. And I could actually tune the frequency using that old coil and spark gaps. And those capacitors, when they're charged that way, they'll get an 800 microfarad capacitor. I keep telling everybody, be careful with those things, because an 800 microfarad capacitor's got enough power to blow the thumb right off your hand. They're not toys. But that's a lot of power inside that. Now, depending on how you want to pull that power off, is it going to be, you know, determined on whatever project you're using it for? But if you can store that much energy inside of a container, like the little bitty can that is the doggone 800 microfarad capacitor, that's a lot of power in one of them. Imagine if you got an entire bank of those things. When you're building a solar battery bank, the more batteries that you have running in combination of series and parallel, like if you want a 36-volt system, and you got three batteries running series, and then you got three sets of batteries running parallel of the series. You have a series, then you have a parallel to another series, to a parallel to another series. And the more of these you put in line, the longer you get out of that storage bank. It's the same thing with the capacitor. So if you could design a capacitor that has a massive storage capability, imagine a 50-gallon drum made out of glass and aluminum plates that was oil-filled. You would have a capacitor that would basically store the equivalence of a lightning bolt. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It wouldn't necessarily be the safest capacitor in the world, but it'd be the most powerful one. Anyway, we got to wrap this thing up, Ted. You got any other ideas before we peel up out of here?
Well, I mean, you know, you keep talking about making this dream team when you already have one. That's something I want to bring up. And then, so we just need some direction here. And then, you know, it's like, I was thinking, you know, I really wanted to work with the Mach transformers and the microwaves and then work with that step down, but, you know, I really think that work with generator heads is easier and safer for everyone.
Yeah. Well, Gerard was doing a deal a long time ago, and actually I had another friend out there that was actually taking these, there's washing machine pumps in the modern day washing machines that they were spinning up and making generators out of. That ought to be something we can get every single person one of that wanted to, you know, test them out to see how far we could actually push these deals. What do you think?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm totally down with whatever. I was able to find, but then after, once I decided I wanted to get a generator head, I was able to find one within a half hour for $50. By calling my local pawn shops, and one of them had one, and it's like, I didn't stop there, like, I didn't start there, like, I talked to the guy at the junkyard, like, I was like, you got any generator, because I was up at his spot, they got a real clean scrap facility up the road where I live, and it's like, the guy's like, yeah, I was like, would you sell them to me for a little more than scrap, because that'd be even less than $50, he doesn't pay people much for them, and then, you know, I bet he's not getting much for them, and it's like, so, you know, he was like, yeah, I'll sell you one. You know, he's like, I don't have any right now.
Here's a resource you may not have thought of. Do you have any heating and cooling shops around your place?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, go there whenever they go to replace, like these X-13s that Ryan Abrams and his friend was getting. Those are generators right out of the doggone gate. They're built like the direct drive brushless generators in the washing machine, but they actually come out of air conditioners. So they usually, whenever they go and replace one, they don't change the circuit board inside there, and they end up going to the scrapyard. So they might have a pile of these things sitting out there from ones that they had replaced, and you might be able to get them for pennies on a dollar, because all they're going to do with them is take them to a scrap yard and have them scrapped out.
But well, what are they called?
Huh?
What are them called?
All I know is they were like X13 motors is what I got. Actually, there's a video, one of my videos, you'll see what it looks like in there. And I think we might have put a picture of the doggone thing.
Okay. But yeah, I'll take a look at that.
But what you want to do is when you go there, look at the ones that's got the permanent magnet rotors in there, because there's smaller ones too. There's some that's small, like a ceiling fan size motor, all the way up to ones that are like a, you know, big 3/4 horse motor looking deal. But yeah, you can take a screwdriver or something and push it to the side of that, and if that screwdriver sticks to it, you know there's a doggone magnet rotor in there. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And normally they got a little circuit board inside the head of that thing that goes bad, and so instead of them replacing that, because you know how they always got to cover that doggone circuit with tar so nobody knows what's inside of it, and it makes it impossible for you to go replace whatever bad part is, it's cheaper for them just to replace that entire motor. And so that one becomes scrap. So if you can get a hold of those, you got generator heads right out of the gate. And if you find one good one, now you got a motor generator with combining the two of them together, because they'll have the same size shaft, and all you have to do is put a coupler on there and level it out to where it's balanced. It ain't going to go anywhere.
That's nice. It's good info.
But you'll find those at air conditioner shops, heating and cooling shops. Most generally, depending on where they're at, they're not going to have them laying right out there in the front of the building, unless you're lucky. Like I got lucky, and I got two washing machine motors like that he just gave to me. I offered to buy every one that he had coming up out of there. But anyway,
well, let's be honest. I mean, I call it a pawn. When you call a pawn shop, you gotta expect to spend money. But if you want to search around for a day or two, there's somebody in your neighborhood that's got a generator that's busted, gas motor that they don't want to fix. You know what I mean? Them things get thrown out. I'm telling you, they get scrapped and thrown out. You offer somebody $50 for an old generator, you know, they're going to give it to you.
Well, for the type of research,
you offer them $20 for a generator, they ain't going to have to drive to the scrapyard. They'll give you they'll take the $20. You know what I mean?
I agree. And that's the same thing. That's the same thing with those doggone motors that I'm talking about at the air conditioner shop. Usually, some guy will come along and offer to buy them for scrap from this guy, so they'll make a deal with this guy. The guy's just buying them for scrap, and he's just taking copper out of them or whatever he wants, and then scrapping the metal out of it. But if you go knock on some doors to some of these AC places and say, what do you do with your old electronics? You know, the old water pumps that out of the washing machine. Just because the pump itself might not be working doesn't mean that pump is bad. It might be something as simple as the magnet in there is all corroded up or something, so you can clean it out and get the thing to work again. But knock on some doors of heating and cooling places and ask them what they do with their old electric motors that they throw away. Because most generally, it ain't the windings in the motor that get burnt up. That's the worst case scenario. Most generally, these modern day motors, these pulse DC motors that are permanent magnet rotors in there and can be used as generators, it's the head that has the circuit board in it that goes bad. It's that simple. And on the washing machine, sometimes circuit ain't even the one that goes bad. There's the Hall effect sensors that tells the coils when to pulse in sequence. Those Hall effect sensors will go bad. And so a lot of times, if they replace those Hall effect sensors on the side of that motor, the thing will work again.
So, well, I agree, but I think when thinking about running appliances, it's important for the dream team to understand how that, and I still don't fully understand it, but I mean to understand how that generator head really works.
Yeah.
Yes, it has different phases in it, and then, you know, it's only really using half of them, and then the other one's excited, and then, you know, it's making a perfect sine wave, and that's what everything people want to run needs to run without damaging it.
That's it.
And that's like a really important thing about that generator head. When I've been using different techniques to think about how to make power, I was never really taking into appreciation all of my appliances and how much, you know, I don't really want to damage them just to run them for you know, clean energy or whatever reason people have that they want to do this kind of technology.
So,
and it's like, I think that nobody's really in it to save a buck, because you find buying this stuff that it costs way more than your average electric bill anyway. So it's like, you know, it's more of a, I think it's more of a hobby for the Dream Team than anything. You know what I mean? You almost need to have a little bit of extra money to buy, you know, your jumper cable, your jumper wires, and, you know, little things, and an extra battery, and some solder, and stuff. All adds up, a little bit of flux here. Solder isn't cheap these days either.
Even if we did it as a hobby and was able to supplement our income by actually building, you know, things for people, you know, like circuit boards that I'd mentioned, if you could put a Slayer Exciter circuit or a Bedini circuit onto a nice looking functional PCB board, to where, like, if I wanted to do some research pulsing these motors with these coils, with these circuit boards, that I don't have to take the time to sit there and try to, you know, put one together. I can buy one from you. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, somebody on the Dream Team should definitely be doing that.
Yeah, and that's how you can make money, by doing this research. By, you know, you'd sell me parts. I'd be buying stuff all the time, because I don't always have the time to sit down and build a circuit, and I don't like breadboard circuits because it's too easy to bump a wire loose. You get something just where you want it, you bump a wire loose, and then you got to spend hours troubleshooting which one's the problem child, and it's frustrating. But if you had already pre-made circuit of what is on the Bedini circuit, make a breadboard and have that on there. Heck, I'd buy them hand over fist in case I burn one out. I'd have a bunch of them. But by pulsing these at different speeds and being able to use like a potentiometer to speed it up and slow it down, the slower you turn these generators, the closer you're going to become to that 60 hertz that you need in order to get that waveform that you want. The higher the frequency, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, actually, you're wanting these things to pulse at a slower rate in order to be able to keep up with the type of energy that we're using at 50 or 60 hertz. That's the key. That's what that doggone rotary spark gap system that I talked about was showing. That at real slow speed, you could see how the current was raising in that by how bright that those bulbs actually got. And by speeding it up and changing that frequency, you'd get to a point where the frequency, because of the way that was designed, was so fast that it wasn't even recognizing that there was any power involved at all. You see what I mean?
Right.
But anyway, folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. I hope something said today didn't discourage you, but, you know, I'm trying not to go insane. I'm trying to show the world something, and, you know, I need the other portion of the Dream Team. I need people, if we're going to build things together, I need the other parts of the puzzle to join.
The Dream Team, I don't mean to interrupt you as you close, but they're listening. They just haven't reached out to you yet.
Well, if you're interested in getting this whole energy thing solved once and for all, you can contact me on Skype, you can contact me on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, ShazizRadio.com, or go over to People for People Radio and tell them you're looking to get a hold of me, and they'll point you in the right direction or whatever. Shaziz@yahoo.com. There's so many different ways to get a hold of me. If you're listening and you actually want to get involved in actually making things, you got a skill set of any kind, I don't care what it is, whether it be electronics or welding or whatever, and you want to see this, you know, we could talk about it till the cows come home, until you're blue in the face, but until you actually bring the pieces of the puzzle together, you know, one man doesn't necessarily build a house by himself. I mean, it's possible. It takes some time. And I could build a house. It'd be slightly crooked, but it'd be waterproof. It just probably wouldn't be measured out to the right specs or whatever, so I'd have a really nice crooked house that I could live in. But, you know, if you bring people together that are good with math and calculations and craftsmanship, you get a really nice house out of the deal. That's what I'm talking about. That's what the Dream Team is capable of. There's somebody out there who has equipment that I don't have, that I have equipment that they don't have, and together our toolbox gets larger and stronger. And if I have to ship something to you that you don't have, I'm willing to do that. Whatever it takes to build a prototype of whatever the Dream Team finally comes across. We need to start. I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to make a doggone Skype channel and a page specifically for Dream Team conversation. And I'm actually going to put together a chat room for specifically only Dream Team members. And the folks that end up inside that chat room are the ones that we're going to work with as far as building a device to share with everybody. How's that sound to you, Ted?
That sounds good. We'll have the Dream Team chat room. We'll make something happen.
All right, cool. Well, folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. I hope you share this podcast. And if you know anybody out there that's got some talent and wants to get some things done and actually believes that free energy is possible, or even if they don't believe free energy is possible, but they believe in incredible efficiency, if we get something down to the point of incredible efficiency, then that means that people don't have to pay near as much for their energy that they normally would have paid for before, as long as we get together and make this thing happen. So with that said, peace and love, everybody.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch